The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
All right, folks, you're with Sweeney and the Waz on a Sunday night, September 28th. Was it a good sports day? I guess it depends on who you love. Because if you're a Giant fan, your team played Thursday night. How convenient, since most Giant fans are Yankee fans anyway. You got to watch Jeter stroll to the plate one last time. We'll get to him later on. But as usual, the Giants get healthy over the last 2 weeks, running all over the Texans with Rashad Jennings and Eli having a turnover-less game with two touchdown passes. And then, in the nation's capital, four touchdown passes for the two-time Super Bowl MVP, all passes to tight ends. And it looks like Eli, the one that his own fans are so quick to always get on, has a grip on this new offense. But unfortunately, the two guys that reside in this studio tonight are Jet fans. And I had to sit through not one, not two, but three losses over the last 3 weeks. I tried to come in with a rosy attitude opening night. The Jets beat the hated Raiders. I played a good song for them. The song tonight's more appropriate for how I feel about this team. Joan Jets, I hate myself for loving you. Because right now, the Jets are not a fun team to root for. Not at all. And today, folks, was more of the same. Once again, the Jets played a home game. It's September, folks, and the Jets have already lost two of their three home games in September. What are we going to do with that? So they come out today, right? They squander a big chance in Green Bay 3 weeks ago, up 21-3. They come home, they don't set the tone, and they lose to an injury-depleted Chicago Bears team. And then today, going up against the Lions, who, statistically, makes sense in having the best defense in the NFL. And they come out. Do they set the tone? Well, they try. They move down the field. Some nice conversions. Running the ball with authority. But once again, they stall out in the red zone. Is that a cruel reminder to Monday night with the Bears? They take a field goal. Detroit matches it. It's 3-3. And you can talk about Geno Smith all you want. I really don't care. I've heard enough of it. I told you. They should have had a real competition. Vic would have won the job, and he would have started, and the team would be 3-1 or 2-2, whatever you want. I know they wouldn't be 1-3, but no. It's the defense that I'm aggravated with, because halfway through the second quarter, they got the Lions in the third and long. Right where you want them? No. Third and long turns into a nice 59-yard touchdown pass. And then, as usual, right before the half, like they did with the Packers, only this one only half a field. They give the Lions the ball back. They go down. Another touchdown before half. So instead of being down 10-3, they're down 17-3. And staring at a 14-point deficit. And when they come out the third quarter, your Jets get back in the game. Decker scores on a touchdown pass from Geno. 17-10. 17-10 at that point. However, what do? We need Joan Jett up there, not that other song. You just got to keep playing Joan Jett there. 17-10. And the Jets give the ball back to the Lions. And what do? 7 points down. This defense needs to rise to the occasion. But no, the Lions march right down the field, 7-8 minutes, dissecting the Jet defense, converting on third and long at least two or three times. Deep in their own territory on a 3rd and 10. Twice. Eventually, Stafford pays tribute to Joe Namath, did it again later with a naked bootleg for a touchdown, and they restore their 14-point lead courtesy of the defense. And then when Johnson turns a busted play for a touchdown run, 35 yards, and it's 24-17, what does the Jets defense do then? They let the Lions run the ball finally effectively and run out the clock. So that's what you got the last 3 weeks. A 21-3 lead against the Packers. Blown. Missed opportunity. And that defense let them have a 97-yard drive before halftime and an 80-yard touchdown in the second half on a pass from Rodgers. And then the Bears? The Bears came to town missing two of their offensive linemen. Cutler gets assaulted just like Rodgers. I don't care if you had four sacks. You should have had 14. And the Jets were 1-for-6 in the red zone. They gave him a touchdown in the beginning. So a team that just blew an opportunity on the road comes home. They don't set the tone. They don't control the tempo of the game. They don't inflict pain on the opponent. And they lose to the Bears, who got assaulted at home today by the Packers, who showed you what you're supposed to do against a team that's suffering through injuries, especially on their offensive line. And even in that game, the Jets had their chances. 17-13 at the half. And my partner asked me, what do you think, Waz? And I told him, John, if the Bears take the ball to open the second half and go down the field and score, the Jets are going to lose. And what did the Bears do? They took the kickoff, opening the second half, and they marched right down the field on that Jet defense and scored a touchdown. And even when the Jets cut it to 24-19, what did they do? They let the Bears march right down the field again, as usual, and put the game away with no time left at the end of that game to do anything. And I already went over today's game. So that's 3 weeks. Suddenly, the rosy start, 1-0, beating the Raiders. Big deal. Who hasn't beaten the Raiders? They're 0-4. Suddenly, they lose to the NFC North. 3-for-3. The Packers, the Bears, and now the Lions. How about that? The Jets are like the scarecrow. You want to know why? Because they ain't got a heart, and they're like the Tin Man. Without the heart, they're like the scarecrow because they ain't got a brain. Isn't that what it is, Johnny? Because this team is not smart. They're not a smart football team, and they all take turns in contributing to losing ways. Coaches, players, quarterback, defense, you name it. I'm sick of it, and it's only the end of September. Can you process that? So for Jet fans, I hope your Ranger fans are out there, because it's almost time to just turn your attention to hockey. If you're a Giant fan, their house is almost back in order. Unfortunately, me and my partner, we hate our team right now because they are just tough to root for, and there is no fun. It is just no fun being a Jet fan right now. What do you think, John?
I think that I don't know who's running the offense. What is going on with this team? They had Green Bay, like we said. They had Green Bay for the taking. Rex Ryan must have been baffled. Oh, we got a lead. We got a lead. They come back. They let Nelson and Rodgers destroy them. 200-something yards receiving.
Right.
Last week, same thing. Oh, in the red zone 6 times. They kicked 5 field goals out of the 6.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. You got to get in there punching it for touchdowns.
They're taking field goals.
What kind of offense are they running? Today, the same thing.
They were going against a lousy defense, and they couldn't get anything accomplished.
Their first drive, 14 plays, 71 yards. They look fantastic. Once again, they can't get the ball in the end zone. They kick a field goal. The next 5 possessions, 3 and out. 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 Thank you.
One first down the rest
of
the
game. One first down, right, exactly.
I mean,
right before the half.
How are you supposed to celebrate that as a fan?
I mean, they came out again, right after that. They stopped Detroit to get the ball back again. Geno hits Decker. 11-yard touchdown. Look good. Then again, interception, fumble. Geno's back to his old tricks. When is he going to realize who's running the offense?
Well, he got pressured into an interception.
I know that.
He got sacked on a fumble. What do you
know? His arm got hit. I understand.
I understand the focus is on his turnovers. But, you know, like you said, Calvin Johnson was shut down for the most part, right? But Golden Tate had a day and a half.
They had no Megatron. The best receiver in football was not playing today.
Golden
Tate? He was in and out. Who's Golden Tate who?
He took over.
Are you kidding me with this?
Hey.
Golden Tate who?
Came over from the Super Bowl winning Seahawks.
What is he, some superstar
wide receiver?
He was today. Of course he was, because the Jets make him like that. Now they got to go against San Diego and Denver. Good luck.
And they only gave up like 70, 80 yards rushing, but they gave up a lot of it at the end of the game.
Good luck against San Diego.
Oh,
and good luck against
Rivers,
Denver.
San Diego, Denver, and then the Pats.
There you go. Your last place, you're going to stay there. So you belong. Wake up. We're actually going to lose your job this year.
That's how you feel after,
that's exactly
after
how
predicting
I feel.
A 10-6
I did.
Season.
With a question mark. We did say a Vic.
All these young hosts here at WGBB need to wake up and really study their team.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
I mean, everyone laughed at me when I said Vic should be starting. And you thought I was just being comical when I said they would go 6-10 with Geno at quarterback, that they would start out like this.
You know what it is with Geno?
You think I'm happy that they're 1-3?
Geno looks like a good quarterback sometimes, and then he looks like a first-year college quarterback when he makes these dumb, goofball plays.
He's not the smartest. He's not the smartest out there, all right?
He could
tends to hold on to the ball too long at times because he's having trouble making his reads. Bottom line, he's a young quarterback. He's not that sharp mentally. At least that's what I'm seeing in his decision-making. And on top of it, he was accurate in the short passing game against the Bears. Today, against the Lions,
he couldn't
not accurate.
He had Ivory
not the short passing game.
Three times. Overthrew him twice, and Ivory dropped the other one on the other one. But then there was other plays where he could have ran. And what he did, he elected to pass into a bad pass. He could have got 8-10 yards running. He's just not thinking straight.
Not thinking straight.
He's not thinking straight.
All right.
And also, does Rex Ryan have a clue? Like that, I'm still baffled over that timeout. That was I know we're in the past, but like Rex Ryan's looking around, shaking his head. I don't know who called the timeout. He's standing right there.
You going back to the Packer game now?
I'm baffled about that. I'm just trying to get back to who's running this team. That's what I want to know. Who's running this team?
Oh, he's in charge, all right.
Okay, let's see how long he's going to be in charge when they end up at 1-5.
Yeah, and they ran the ball well today. Just morning week at times, and there were times where he did stick with the run. I really can't fault the play calling for why they lost this game at all. I'm telling you, they lost this game because the defense does nothing to help themselves. They have no interceptions, this defense. None. I don't care. Number two in yardage. I don't care. They have no interceptions, and they have no forced fumbles outside of the gift that Rodgers gave them.
That was a
game. And they stripped Cutler last week.
Right.
So outside of those two turnovers by quarterbacks, they have no forced fumbles on hits on running backs or receivers. They don't put fear into the opponent. They're not a hard-hitting team. They don't intimidate nobody. I know he must have this great vision from watching his father run that 85 Bears defense. But Rex Ryan does not have a scary, pain-inflicting defense. And that's the problem with this team. Because if they did, that running game would probably dominate a little more.
Yes.
And they'd be a little more likely
better,
to
right.
not be
exactly.
1-3 and be 2-2, 3-1. Okay? Where everyone's going to focus on the quarterback, gets the brunt of the blame, bulk of the credit, all that.
Of course.
I'm telling you right now, this defense is not what everybody wants to have you think it is. It's not. I don't care. I don't care what turnovers.
I don't care what turnovers
Geno has. That's what quarterbacks do. They turn over the ball.
He just...
Unfortunately, especially when they're young. So be it.
17 for 33 with 209. You're telling me that's a decent day?
Instead of putting on the facade, they should have let Vic compete against them for real, win the job, and play to win.
Well, I don't understand why you bring a guy in. You pay him $5 million, and you say, guess what? You're going to sit on the bench,
right.
And I'm going to have Geno as a starting coach. They didn't even have a competition. At least make something out of it.
Why was that? Can you figure out?
Why are you going to pay somebody $5 million to sit on the bench? And what's his purpose?
I don't know.
When Geno comes over and goes, okay, Geno, pat him on the back and say, try a little better next time. Well, next time look down the field. You can get whoever.
You have the all-time leading rusher amongst quarterbacks in the history of the game, and you have him at $5 million. You have him sitting on the bench.
I'll tell you right now.
Instead of in the game with Chris Johnson and Ivory, you have him on the bench.
I will say
why
this.
Did you bring him here? He's not young.
A lot of people aren't going to like this, but if you bring Vic in a two-minute offense kind of like in the end of the game, they would have beat, or even Green Bay, yes.
He should be starting. Forget about bringing him in.
But let me tell you something.
You
got to bring him in here and there.
College now?
They would have beat Chicago.
Fine.
And they probably would have won today.
They would have beaten Chicago if they came out with
Green
the right
Bay,
mentality.
They,
they came out and took advantage of being home, right? Use that loss to Green Bay after they built the big lead as fuel for their fire and came out on their home turf where Rex wants to dominate home.
Dominate home.
A scary place to play.
And it's not.
When it came out and set the tone and knocked the snot out of the Bears, who were already banged up.
Right.
And down manpower.
I think they had six out.
They would have won the game.
But they didn't.
And I understand the pick allowed the Bears to build a 14-0 lead eventually early on, but the Jets had chances to get back.
Monday night.
They failed to come through defensively and allow their offense to get
prime time
back
game
and
too,
win the game.
And they dropped the ball again.
Listen,
the best option
this,
is Michael Vick.
They did this years ago, right? They threw Browning Nagel to the Wolves when they brought in a veteran, right? They brought in Boomer Esiason, won an MVP in Cincinnati, and in 1993 they tried to win. I'll give them that much. They did the same thing. After they let Paynton go, right?
Right.
They didn't go with Clemens, another second-round pick. They didn't give him a chance to take over for sure. They didn't give him a full season. They threw him aside, and they brought in Brett Favre to try and do something. So now all of a sudden, and I know that did fail, ultimately, but they were 8-3 at one point, okay? Before the aging superstar got hurt, supposedly. Fine. But here you're telling me that Geno Smith, after everybody ranted and raved about the fact that Sanchez had no competition at quarterback, you're telling me that you're bringing in, and I don't care about his injury past, let him play, and if he gets hurt, he gets hurt. You're going to bring in a quarterback of the caliber of Michael Vick, and you're going to pay him that kind of money, and you're not going to have a competition, you're not going to let him win the job.
I understand it.
Now, who can still switch quarterbacks and do something? They did it in 98. 0-2, and that wasn't necessarily Foley's fault, but they threw him aside, they brought Testaverde in, and they went 12-2 the rest of the
year. That's
right. So you can make a decision even though you built, you know, a bit of a, you know, barrier for yourself to have to get through a 1-3 hole, but there is a way to fix it. You can make a move now.
It's not too late.
They will. It's not like the old days where you could switch quarterbacks and let a guy sit, take a breath and develop. Nowadays, as soon as you pull a quarterback out, it's like suicide. Like, oh, the guy's dead. He's done here. Get him out of town.
Well, when they go to San Diego next week, and Rivers throws is up 21-0 on them, what's going to happen then?
I don't know.
What's going to happen?
It's another day, another game. We'll see how they come out.
Pryor limped off the field today.
Yeah,
he's hurt.
Dean Milner, how long is he out for now?
Milner couldn't play today. He probably can't play next week.
Right.
So what are you going to do? I mean, you lost the Hawk. And actually, the Hawk hasn't done nothing, really. Made a couple of hits. He hasn't really done anything spectacular.
No.
He's a rookie, though.
The Jets have failed.
Miserably.
There must be at least two or three times I saw a ball thrown right into a Jet defender's lap, and they failed to grip the ball, haul it in, and return it for a touchdown. They've missed opportunities that were almost handed to them. That's how aggravating this defense is.
That's why this team's not going anywhere this year.
Now, what do we got? Somebody on hold? We have a fellow WGBB host. Gary's on hold. Gary, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, boys. What's going on?
Gary, how are you?
What happened? You went to your first Jet game since 1968?
Yeah, I lost my virginity. It was very interesting, and I just want to add on the comment. I mean, I was sitting in section 249A, so behind one of the goals, and I saw a lot of something that really surprised me with Geno Smith. To me, I'm seeing like the second coming of Chad Pennington. I mean, can this guy throw a ball for more than 12 yards?
What do you mean the second coming?
After the first go-round when they got the field goal, it seems like Detroit realized, okay, this guy's not going to go deep. We're just going to bring ourselves back in and just play coverage. And they stifled him. I mean, you know, as you were saying with Vic, you need somebody that's going to just take that ball and just chuck it down the field.
Exactly. But the only thing with Pennington, he had accuracy. He was pinpoint accurate with everything.
And he had a brain. Are you trying to pick on Chad Pennington?
As far as the range is concerned.
Range.
You know, it's
talking
like
about
everybody knows. He's not going to throw deep.
Vic throws the ball downfield. I've seen him hit that and a few other guys downfield.
Right.
Maybe not for 50-yard bombs, but I've seen him throw the ball downfield.
But today, it seems like the Lions defense just knew. You know, you just keep them in that 10-yard zone, and you're going to take care of business, and that's exactly what they did.
Well, what was the fan? Were the fans chanting for Vic at the end of the game? Because I know there was something going on.
Yeah, they were, big time. Very big. And just seeing when it became 24-10, just the amount of people that walked out of that place was just mystifying.
Because Geno had an argument with one of the fans or something.
Yeah, supposedly he went off on someone, and ESPN put out about an hour later that made an apology for it. But
we know how fans can be.
Oh, of course.
I got to be honest with you. I don't see, you know, I guess you want to pick on Pennington's lack of arm strength. That's fine. But you know what, Gary? That's not the problem with Geno Smith. They ran the ball for 5 yards a clip. He threw the ball in terms of range was fine. He was just so inaccurate today on short passes. It was disgusting.
He's the complete opposite
of Pennington in that regard.
Three straight passes right before the half. That just blew my mind out. Yeah, there were some that you get that ball in your hands. You got to grip it. You got to put it in your body, and you got to run with the damn thing. I mean, that one out in the flat where I think it was Ivory that dropped it. I mean, there was nobody within 25 yards of this guy.
He's on that one play. Yeah, I know what you're talking
about. Late in the game, late in the half. You know, I mean, he could have won walked into the end zone almost.
Right, exactly. I think there were three passes to Ivory that he overthrew him twice, and Ivory dropped one. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question. When Johnson ran the touchdown in and the Jets brought it within seven, did you think they was the fans going with it? How were the fans in the stands? Were they thinking that we have a shot? Here we go. Were they getting pumped up for this?
It's funny. Up in my section, it was, you know, everybody was dropping F-bombs and, you know, pretty upset, you know. And actually, after the touchdown was scored, it was all I heard was, oh, same old Jets.
Yeah. Listen, the fans, when they cut the lead to 17-10, the fans tried to help them get back in it. And their defense went out and let the Lions march right down the field.
I mean, you
know, he just threw a touchdown pass to Eric Decker. It's 17-10. The defense needs to go out and make a big stop midway through the third quarter, and they drove the ball right down their throat.
I mean, I think they did a great job of holding Megatron down to two catches for, you know, 2 6-yard catches. But, I mean, where the hell was the coverage on Tate?
Well, but Stafford adjusted.
Every big play, Tate was out there and was open like crazy. Yeah, Nobody would hear him.
Hold on, Gary, but let me tell you something about Megatron. He was injured anyway. He was probable for the game, and he kept coming
out. I get he was an injury, and yes, that leads to the fact, but still, you got an elite guy like that.
Who is Tate? I mean, what is this guy, like a superstar receiver all of a sudden now?
Guys, he threw for almost 300 yards. Come on. He used the other receivers. He adjusted. He killed them on
the
own, too.
This guy Ross, 2 for 65 with a touchdown. He had that 59-yard touchdown, right? I mean, you know, Ebron, the rookie tight end, 3 for 34 with a touchdown.
Did you get these tickets for free at least, Gary?
No, actually, a friend of mine, a fellow Islander Booster Club member, is in Cancun right now, so I took his tickets.
He made you pay for them?
Oh, yeah, I paid his price. Yeah, I didn't pay for
it. Well, that's horrible.
Gary.
You know what, Gary? I would have advised you to stay home and watch the Islanders, but they don't even put their preseason games on TV, so I can't even tell you to do
that. Wait a minute. Friday's game was on.
Oh, so what? Because they were playing the Devils?
Wait, hold on.
Brooklyn.
Come on. They had a home game at the Coliseum, and they didn't even put it on TV. That's disgraceful.
Well, I know. Well, they didn't want to show the fact there was only 3,000 people there, Derek.
That's a bit disgraceful. Sorry.
Well, you know what? Even during the Cup years, they didn't draw in preseason games. Nobody ever goes to
the They should be on TV. Everybody else has their games on TV.
I agree, but you know what? That's the parent company's decision.
As long as you're clear on that. And I believe that my team, the owners, for whatever they're worth, they make more money when your team is on TV because you're on a Rangers station. So
it's true.
There you go.
I agree, but, you know.
You had to get that little tidbit.
That's right. On the positive side, Gary, I would like to wish you the best of luck in your baseball playoffs since you're such a big Orioles fan.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And the first time in 17 years, it's very nice to have.
What's the first time in 17 years?
First time in 17 years, the Orioles won the...
won a division title.
Division title, yeah.
Because they did lose a couple years ago to the Yankees.
Yes.
But I am a big Buck Showalter fan. I really hope he does get to the World Series.
I would love to see it, but you know what? The Angels right now are just... They're locked up on all cylinders. And, you know, actually, I'm more excited about Kansas City finally getting a chance to make it for the first time in 29 years.
Yeah, I'd like to see them, you know, knock off Oakland in that one game playoff. That'd be nice.
Yeah, to play Anaheim.
Absolutely. That's, you know, you wish for stories like that. I mean, Pittsburgh last year was a great story. Finally, getting a winning season after 22 years. Kansas City doing well. You know, you like to see those stories happen.
Well, Pittsburgh's playing San Fran. They're back in it again. So
yeah, right. I get that. But I mean, last year's story.
So how do you like your chances against Detroit, real quick? Baltimore.
Wow. You know, I mean, you still have to, you know, even though Verlander didn't have the greatest of years, you still got to fear that pitching staff. And, you know, I mean, the Baltimore's pitching has done wonders. I mean, you know, the Chinese guy, I think his name is. He had a fantastic year.
He's good.
16-5 or
16-6. 16-5, yep. I mean, they've got some great kids, you know. It's just a matter, you know. Well, and remember, they're playing without their all-star catcher.
Right.
Weir's got hurt. Markakis hasn't been playing anywhere near what he's supposed to be. There's a lot of guys that are really disappointed.
Well, Cruz stepped it up. What do you have, 39?
Cruz had a monster year for you. And Adam Jones is excellent. Listen, they did a great job.
They got a good team.
Getting through the season and winning the title without Weiders and without Machado, they did great. And as long as they have a lead, they got a pretty good eighth, ninth inning setup.
Yes, they do.
But Zach Britton, the closer, came out of nowhere. That kid's lights out, that kid.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, he had a great season. You know, so it's a nice story to see these guys, other teams that are making it.
I think they're going to take out Detroit. Detroit has not been impressive at all down the stretch. And in addition to Verlander, Porcello's been getting hammered too. So Price hasn't been.
David Price.
He hasn't been impressive today.
Second run with Detroit, you know, since he got traded from Tampa Bay. So, I mean, I don't have any faith in him. But, you know, sometimes these guys, you know, these seasoned veteran pitchers, you know when it's October and they come through.
Well, Joe Nathan has no history of big-time success as a closer. So
Nathan's on his last leg. That
might help you down the stretch here.
Exactly.
This is it for Nathan. I think it's his last year. He just can't. He just having these elbow problems. Well, Gary, like we have a huge, big, huge old-time Jet coming on the show in a little bit, a couple minutes.
Yes, Mr. Hart.
Yeah, I'm
looking forward to listening to that interview.
The old-time Jet kick returner. We're very excited about this guy. Right, Derek?
It'll be a fun interview. A lot more fun than talking about this current team. They make me sick. They really, they're no fun to root for. I give you credit for going to the game. I haven't been to that new stadium, and I plan on going.
It was very interesting, and somebody, had the comparison, and I didn't notice until when I walked out to go back to the train. But you look at the outside of the building, it looks like a prison cell.
That's nice.
The back of a prison with all the metal bars around it. It was, really interesting to look at. But inside it was beautiful, great seats, really really nice setup. And I'm very impressed with it. But, $12 for a beer is a little too much.
That's ridiculous.
There you go.
It's ridiculous.
And that was your first game in person since 1968?
1968, I was 4 years old when I went to Shea Stadium. I have no recollection of it whatsoever.
Well, they won the Super Bowl that year, so maybe they'll win this year, too.
Maybe they'll turn things around. They're 1-3. Maybe they'll turn it around.
Maybe you'll be the good luck charm.
Sure, Waz. Your lips to God's ears.
Maybe that'll be the case. And then you go back in 2038. That'll probably be the real next time they have a chance. All right, man.
That was great, guys. Listen, have a great show.
Gary, thank you.
Thanks for calling in.
All right, take care, man.
Yeah, bye-bye. See that Gary said the fans were going crazy.
There are a lot of Tracy Jet fans out there, too.
So. And they turn quick. I have tickets to the Denver game.
I'm not going to blame a fan for turning quick the way this Jet has handled their business. This Jet team has handled their business the last few years, I'm not going to blame a Jet fan for getting on them. But there is a smart way to do it.
It seems like the Jets have an opportunity to go out, get the lead, and then they just... I don't know what happens. They fall apart, and it just goes like this. How do you do that? You come out with a great drive in the beginning, 71 yards.
Everybody
and then
takes turns.
Five three and outs. How does that happen? What do you mean everyone takes turns?
Everybody
takes
turns.
You can't get one first down and five.
Everybody takes turns contributing to these losses. If it ain't Gino making a dumb decision or throwing an interception, it's Giacomini today with a penalty in the wrong spot or missing a block. That leads to a third, when they're running the ball well, and then all of a sudden the lineman cost them a big gainer on a run, and now they got to throw on third down, and Gino he was not accurate today whatsoever. 50% accuracy, that's good if this is the 1980s.
Yeah.
All right? It's 2014.
Well, let me tell you something. They're lucky.
You got to hit your short passes. And let me tell you, on Monday night against the Bears, he hit his short passes.
He looked good.
We talked on the phone. He was at one point, 12 for 16. He was throwing the ball fine. He just made a big mistake early, feeding that guy, trying to force that, that screen pass. And all of a sudden, it's 7-0 Bears 10 seconds into the game.
Right. Today,
his passing accuracy was what cost them.
Yeah, and it was beautiful out there.
Cost him.
It wasn't like it was like the Meadowlands with the wind and this and that. And look, Stafford threw for 293 with two touchdowns.
They put up 360 yards offense.
That's ridiculous.
The Packers, granted, the Jets were up 21-3, so they had to put up yardage, but they put up almost 400 yards of offense.
Jordy Nelson had 200 itself.
I mean, the Bears didn't put up much offense. They put up enough, but not much. But it didn't matter because that's the game where you're talking about the Jets' red zone efficiency.
The Jets were good. They held Forte. They held Forte in check. They held Cutler in check.
San Diego, Denver, New England. That's the next three games.
So what are we talking about?
At San Diego next Sunday, home against Denver on the 12th of October, and then a Thursday night in New England.
So they're going to be 2-6.
And even if they won. Even if they won two of those games, they'd still be 3-4. You think they're winning two out of those three?
I think they're winning one out of those three.
Well, that would put their record at what, 2-5?
Right, 2-5.
Yeah, well, the last time I saw them do something with that kind of record was Pennington's first year.
I can't see them
beating
San Diego
in San Diego. To run the operation, you can forget going anywhere at 2-5. But our next show probably won't be until after the midpoint of the season. Right, I tried to stay upbeat opening day. The Raiders, big deal. The Raiders are getting hammered. They're getting hammered. They stink. The Jets barely beat them. They let them come back to the point where they had a chance with an onside kick in that game, no less. Whatever.
Whatever is right. Miami Dolphins destroyed Oakland today, 38-14. We should have done that. That should have been our score, 38-14. Tannehill was ready to get benched.
What is good about the Jets right now? Greg Salas? Yeah, he makes a few nice catches. Really,
he's
what is
a shining star.
The only guy that I could say this guy's been good game in and game out is Chris Ivory. That's the only guy.
Yeah, Ivory. Johnson stepped
up.
Can
we name one other guy that's been good game in and game out?
And I praised Johnson from the beginning. I was like, this is the next best running back to Curtis.
Wasn't utilized a lot.
Either maybe he's hurt. Maybe that injury, he lost a step. I don't know. But today he looked good on that one play.
What was the biggest
one
today?
One play.
Eric Decker's wife sang the anthem, and he scored a touchdown.
Yes,
that's big positives, according to the Fox staff broadcast. Yeah. Okay, well.
Ivory's the feature back. What happened to Powell? Do they use him anymore?
Once in a while in certain packages.
I understand it.
You know, then they don't even use him, and then they put him at the end of the Bears game. He's in there.
Yeah.
I know he's a better pass blocker, but still. Ivory was effective against them.
And you're putting the guy in that hasn't played the whole... That was another bonehead move.
Like I said, coaching, offense, defense, quarterback, they all take their turn.
You put Powell in at the end of the game, hasn't played all game, and you're putting him in there, you're trusting his hands at the end of the game. That was another bonehead move. Rex, wake up, otherwise you're going to be out of a job very soon. Very, very soon.
I just want him to shut up.
They end up 1-6. Rex is going to be gone.
I just want him to shut his mouth.
Get back to the fundamentals.
Get his team revved up.
Put the best quarterback in there.
Win some games.
The guy
and hit somebody.
Yeah.
Put a jolt into somebody and force some turnovers on defense, and maybe things will turn around in game for you. All right? Listen, that's enough of this garbage. Let's take a break. Quick station break. We'll come back. We'll get Bruce Harper on the line. Special guest tonight for you folks. Former Jet running back, kick returner from the early 80s, Bruce Harper. 888-8811 is the phone number. Give us a call in the 9 o'clock hour. We're here for 2 hours. We got an hour and a half to go. Back after this.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA. Or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
All right, folks, we're back Sunday night. 631-888-8811. 30 minutes of venting. Jet frustration by the board. Gone. Over with. We got a special guest coming on now. We're going to go back in history so we can celebrate a little bit or be happy about a little Jet talk here for a little bit here. And we're going to welcome in Bruce Harper, a former Jet running back and kick returner. Played for the Jets 1977 to 1984. Not only led the league, Johnny, in kick return yardage his first 3 years in the league. He led the league in all-purpose yards.
All-purpose yards.
In 1978 and 1980, voted team MVP in 1980. And, Bruce, you still have the record for the longest touchdown run in Jet history. Thank you for joining us, buddy.
Thank you, Bruce.
Wow, that is something, man. I can't believe after all these years that record still stands. But it's a pleasure to be here. I'm always happy to talk about my team.
And they are your team. Listen, you were born in Englewood, New Jersey. You grew up in the area. Tell us a little bit about yourself. And were you an athlete growing up? Were you into the pro sports?
Oh, I was totally into the pro sports. I was like most kids today, you know, totally interested in playing football. That was the one sport I really liked, and I always wanted to play professionally. But, you know, as a kid, you don't know what's going to happen. So, but, yeah, man, I was into it. Playing in Englewood, this is so funny. I think about it. I was a kid in the neighborhood that would go from door to door to my friends' houses and tell them, everybody's in the park playing football. Get your stuff and come down. In the meantime, in reality, there was nobody there. I wanted everybody to come down, but I remember telling them to come down, and, you know, by the time it was all done, yeah, we had a whole team down there playing football. So I love football.
That's a great story.
All right, so growing up in Jersey, who was your favorite football team? Were you a Jet fan growing up, or were you a Giant fan? Who'd you root for?
Now, you know, honestly, I had no particular team that I was interested in. I was totally just fascinated by the guy that had the football.
Okay.
There wasn't any one guy or anything like that. I was just fascinated by the thing. I didn't have any favorite teams or anything. So,
all right, so growing up as a football player, were there any athletes that you looked up to at the time?
I'm totally honest. You know, no. There was not any one. I remember Lydell Mitchell. I remember watching him on television. He wasn't too much sooner than me. But
okay.
As a kid, no, I don't have any one person that I could say that I was fascinated by or anything. I totally just unconsciously I would study the guy that had the football and was running with the football.
All right, so no big Jim Brown fan, not a big Walter Payton fan or anything like that. You just grew up an athlete. So you played football. Were there any other sports that you played growing up, basketball or any baseball?
Well, no, I ran track. You know, I had pretty good speed, and I needed to learn how to run. So I ran track, you know, kind of like as an aside. You know, it was just, it wasn't my, you know, love or anything. I just loved running, but, you know, so I just ran track, and I was too small to play basketball. I liked playing basketball, but I was too small, and, you know, so football was it for me.
All right. So football was your focus. And you went to Kutztown University in Pennsylvania. You were the first running back in school history to run for 1,000 yards. Tell us about your time at Kutztown.
Well, you've done your homework. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
No, that's right. First of all, I love Kutztown State. We were Kutztown State College. It is Kutztown University now. But it was really good for me because we were Division III and, you know, not a big school for football. You know, there were no big name guys going to Kutztown. So what it gave me was an opportunity to really play and hone in on my skills. You know, had I gone to Ohio State, I would have been behind Archie Griffin or, you know, somebody
right,
else,
right.
I mean, a couple of guys. But I got to play, and I really learned my skills, and it was a real good story. I was very fortunate at the time of my senior year. Walt Michaels' son, he was the newly named head coach of the Jets, and his son was at Kutztown as a freshman when I was a senior. And I asked him to call his dad up and ask him to invite me to come up and try out for the Jets. And he did it. And his dad, Walt Michaels, let me come up and try out. You know, I ran a 40. It was okay. I stuck on. And, you know, then the rest is history.
That's wonderful. Did you have any other tryouts for any other teams? Or just once the Jets, that was it? You were a Jet?
Yeah, no, well, I went to the Giants, but it was just a conversation, and I didn't get any good vibes from them. You know, they thought I was too small, as most people did, and, you know, coming from Kutztown. So the Jets were the ones that were going to give me an opportunity to actually get on the field, and so that was where I went.
Well, us as Jets fans, this is John Sweeney talking, us as Jets fans, we were so happy and honored that you were on the Jets to do what you did for the Jets. So I'm glad you did. I guess your family was ecstatic. because you're coming from Jersey and you're actually playing with the Jets. It's got to be a great feeling to play for the hometown team.
Yeah, it really, really was. You know, I mean, I remember my hometown, my family, they would get busloads of people to come over to the games and stuff. And it was real nice with one exception. It cost a lot of money paying for all those tickets.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was really a lot of fun. Yeah, there is something to be said about playing in your hometown, you know. And the Jets, you know, they gave me a great opportunity, so I took the best. I made the best of it.
Well, Bruce, you're a little shifty guy, so you weren't much of a kick returner in college. Who turned your attention to that when you made the team?
Well, I don't remember really returning punts or kickoffs in college. They told me when I got to the Jets, you know, the more things you can do, the more reason for the team to keep you there, right? They said my best opportunity to make the team was by returning punts and kicks. So I learned how to catch the ball. That was the big thing first, you know.
Right.
And fortunately, I was a little successful returning punts. My love, though, was just running the ball from the backfield, you know, and even catching passes out of the backfield. But the kick return, punt return, that was not my favorite. I think I did okay, but, you know, it was not my favorite thing. I like running the ball from scrimmage.
Well, you know, you had a tremendous effect on field position. Like I said, leading into the interview, you led the league in kick return yardage your first 3 years in the league. You led the NFL in all-purpose yards, which does mean a lot when it comes to possessing the ball and field position. In 1978 and 1980, when you had 50 catches for over 600 yards, you were voted team MVP. That must have felt real special at the time, because the Jets, you know, your early years, they were 8-8 a couple times, you know, 3-11, 4-12. They shifted from, you know, 14 to 16 games in there. So you must have felt something in terms of the confidence flowing through you winning the team MVP award, right?
Oh, well, just winning that was a great compliment, you know, to be considered the most valuable player on the team. You know, it was a great honor. But when you're focused in on playing the game, which I was like a kid out there just having fun, when you're focused on just playing the game, these things don't really mean that much.
Right.
You know, you don't think, that wasn't my goal to become the most valuable player. That was kind of like, you know, it was something that happened, you know, and it was great. I loved it. It was a great compliment. It showed appreciation by the rest of the team, and it didn't help me negotiating any, but for my salary. But you know, it was a great compliment. It was a great compliment.
Well, you know what? It's voted on by teammates, so it was a result of your hard work and your performance. You came through big time for them in 1980.
Yes.
Now, the funny thing that I really didn't think about it until I looked up your stats was, in all the kick return yardage you had, punt returns, kickoff returns, you didn't have any kickoff returns for touchdowns. You only had one punt return for a touchdown. Please tell me you remember it and can tell a story for us to listen about this.
I can tell you, first of all, I did return one in preseason. And when I first started, you could block below the waist on the kickoff returns. So it was a little bit easier. And then my second year was the first year you could not block. So it made a big difference. It was not that it was easy in my first year, but it was not that comfortable. Another thing, believe it or not, I was pretty fast. I was actually clocked. I had the fastest time in the 40 on the team 1 year. And I was pretty fast and quick. But after I ran past 40 yards, I was done. You know, so I got caught from behind a couple of different times. So, but that's a very good observation on your part, that you noticed that I did not return many kicks for touchdowns. And I was definitely getting positive yards, always getting positive yards.
Right.
But I never really could break the big ones, you know.
Right. But
and that proves it right there, that it's true.
Yeah, but a tremendous effect on field position. So now let's fast forward through your career. To the good years. And let's start, I wanted to ask you about 1981. And I got to say, you know, the first great moment for me as a Jet fan, because I probably started rooting for the Jets right when, just before you came in, like 1976. But in 1981, the Jets battled for first place. They lost out at the end of the season. But I'll never forget, there was a game at Shea where you beat the Dolphins at the end. You tied them early in the year. You know, you started out the year like 0-3, right, and then you were 1-3 or something like that. But then now you came back. And I think it was in November whatever it was, you're down 15-9, and Richard Todd, I'll never forget him hitting Jerome Barkham in the back of the end zone, and you guys are tied for first place with Miami. Do you remember that game? Was that like the first big-time moment in terms of competition for you on the team, in terms of really, you know, getting to the playoffs and all that?
I do remember that game. I will never forget that game. I can still right now see the stands in Shea Stadium. You know, they bring stands in, you know, to cover around the baseball field. I can still see the stands rocking, literally rocking up and down. The fans were so into it. It was so loud in there. Jerome catching that touchdown in the end zone, I'll never forget it. Wesley Walker, I think maybe Nicky Shula had a touchdown. It was just a wonderful, wonderful day. That was a highlight in our Jets history while I was there anyway. So Wesley Walker, though, was the man. He was the one that caught those long passes. And, you know, we used to say about Wesley, you know, talking about the defenders, if he was even, he was leaving. He was so fast, he'd run right by these guys. So he was one of my favorite, absolutely one of my favorite ball players on the Jet team.
You know, we spoke with Ken O'Brien last show we did, and we spoke about Wesley Walker a lot. And I always say, you know, a lot of times in the NFL, they put heavy weight on winning Super Bowl titles. And if that Jet team would have won a Super Bowl one of those 2 years, 81 or 82, I mean, to me, without question, the personnel that was there, Wesley Walker, Joe Klecko, and Mark Gastineau, they would have all made the Hall of Fame, more than likely. Wesley Walker, was Wesley the best athlete you played with on that team?
Wesley was fast. He had good hands. I would not call him the very best athlete on the team. You know, being an athlete is there's much more to being an athlete than being fast. And
right.
He was one of the top athletes.
Who do you think was the best football player you played with on that team?
On that team.
It's really hard to say that. You know, that's first of all, it was a long time ago.
You
got to
give us one. When we had Ken O'Brien on, Bruce, he came after you, so he was like mid-80s to late-80s, and he said the best guy he played with. I gave him a choice. I gave him Gastineau and Al Toon. He said Al Toon was the best football player he played with, without question. And then he brought up Joe Klecko. So if I gave you those three guys, Joe Klecko, Mark Gastineau, and Wesley Walker, who was the best football player you played with?
Or yourself.
No, you can't pick yourself. Come on.
Hey, no.
If it's somebody else, you can tell me, but who's the best guy you played with on your team?
Hey, you just named the top guys, and it would not even be fair, you know, to the other guys to say one was the greatest, you know. They were just great. And the thing about us that was so good, we played well together as a team in those few years right there.
Yes.
When we made it to the AFC Championship game against the Dolphins.
Right, 1982, yes.
Yeah, man. I mean, there was absolutely no reason we did not win the Super Bowl on multiple occasions. But it's very unfortunate, you know, the Mud Bowl down in Miami. Don Shula didn't cover the field.
I'll never forget that.
So, you know, that was very unfortunate on our part. We still should have won the game, but, I mean, that's one of the very absolute lowlights in the time of my career there playing for the Jets, that we didn't make it to the Super Bowl.
Well, you know what, Bruce? You know, your rookie year, you lost to the Dolphins both times. But from 78 through 81, you beat them every time and you tied them once, right? So in eight games, you won seven and tied one. And then, strangely enough, in that 1982 season, three times you lost to the Dolphins. I couldn't believe it as a Jet fan because I was so used to watching the Jets beat the Dolphins. Right. You know, in 98, I think if the Jets would have got to the Super Bowl, I think they would have won it because they would have played the Falcons.
The Washington Redskins.
But I'm saying in 1998, they had a chance. They went to the title game. They lost to Denver, which is nothing wrong with that. I mean, John Elway's a Hall of Famer. They had a lead. They blew it. They lost the game. If they would have made the Super Bowl, I think they would have beaten Atlanta.
Right.
But in 1982, after beating the Raiders, I mean, the Raiders were supposed to win the whole thing that year. They had just moved from Oakland to L.A. They were dominant in the regular season. I think they might have lost one game. And after the Jets, that was the most exciting Jet playoff game I ever saw, beating them 17-14. After they beat the Raiders, I understand Don Shula is a Hall of Fame coach, but there ain't a Hall of Fame player on that Dolphin team. I thought that was the Jets' best chance to make it against Woodley, who wasn't as good a quarterback as Richard Todd. And I thought the Jets had excellent skill guys. I understand the thing with the turf and the rain because Free McNeil, in a short season with the strike, he led the league in rushing that year. So do you agree that that was probably the best chance for the last 30 years, that was probably the best chance the Jets had to make it?
Absolutely, because we were right there, man. And like you said, it's very astute on your part to remember that the Dolphins, we lost to the Dolphins three times. And I think what happened in that situation, like you said, previously we had won most of the game. So it was weird for us to not beat the Dolphins during the regular season.
Right.
By the time we got to the playoffs, the AFC Championship game, we were just overconfident. You know, it was like they set out to they were pumped up. They were pumped up, and we were not pumped up enough because we thought it was like an automatic win. We were going to – there's no way we could lose to the Dolphins three times in a row.
Right.
You know, and I think that was the overall spirit or thinking of our team then. And then we went down there. The Dolphins were pumped up. We were a little relaxed, and they kicked our butt. I mean, you know. We were right there. We should have had it, man. You guys are getting me mad. I'm getting fired up again.
I want you to be mad because
we're a little mad,
Bruce. I'm 45 years old. I was born 1 month after the Jets won their only Super Bowl, so I've been getting angry over the years, waiting for my team to win a title. Now I want to ask you because you split time 81-82. You kind of split the kickoff return duties with Kurt Sahn. What was it like being around Kurt Sahn and playing with him as a partner back there?
Kurt Sahn was I think he was a better punt returner or a kick returner than I was.
Okay.
And, by that time, I had been, in the league 5-6 years or something like that. You know, I was even slowing down a little bit, right. You know, and I felt like he should have been the main guy, returning the kickoffs, because he was very good, very good. And, I liked being back deep, with him back there. And still, though, he hadn't done enough for them to make him, like, the featured kick returner. I was still, hanging in there as the one to kick the ball to, but I liked Kurt Sahn. I thought he was pretty good.
Also, I'd like to ask you, you were there when they really took flight, this New York Sack Exchange. They got their nickname 81, the 66 sacks as a team. What was it like being on the sideline watching those guys out there on defense, that front four, Abdul Salam, Marty Lyons, obviously, Klecko and Gessner. What was that like being around that whole dynamic?
Not only the front line, the linebacking core. Oh, my goodness. The DBs, the defensive backs and safeties.
Right.
They were a tough defense, man. I mean, like you said, it started right there with the line, with the sack exchange, man. Those guys, they made it happen, man. Marty Lyons was in there. Of course, Klecko and Gastineau and, I mean, it was just great. Abdul Salam, oh, my goodness. Abdul, and he doesn't get enough credit.
He was excellent. Number 74, man, come on.
He was the anchor, man. He was the anchor. He held it down right there in the middle so that everybody else had an opportunity to do the other thing. So, that defense was, that defense was just awesome. They were great. It was great.
Well, I know a lot of people are still familiar with Greg Buddle because he's around for pre- and post-game stuff on the radio, but Lance Mell, speak about him if you can. I thought he was one of the more intelligent linebackers I'd seen in the NFL. He was cut down by an injury, ended his career in 1986, but how was it watching Lance Mell patrol at linebacker? Because I thought he was great sideline to sideline.
Lance Mell was absolutely great sideline to sideline. Going back to Greg Buddle, though, he was, like I said, Abdul was the core, was the anchor of the defensive line.
Right.
Greg Buddle was the captain, and he was the one, he kind of facilitated. He made more things happen as well. He was the guy. He was the linebacker. Lance Mell was talented. In practice, I could beat all of those linebackers in a one-on-one when I went out for a pass. I used to own it in practice, one-on-one, boom, boom, boom.
Right.
Lance Mell was the one guy I could not get away from. I don't know what it was. Well, his explanation as to why I couldn't get away from him was because he said that I would come out of the backfield and make all of these moves, and he was too slow to react to them. So he just went with the one that I did, and then he was covering me like a blanket, man. He was the one guy I couldn't shake him. He was great. I like Lance Mell as a person as well.
And there's one other guy I want to ask you about because it never comes up. Listen, I know Gastineau was a 5-time Pro Bowler, 3 times first team All Pro. You know, Joe Klecko made All Pro a couple times. Wesley Walker had a monster year, 78. He was an All Pro. But you're a running back. You love running the ball. I want you to talk, if you can, a little bit about Marvin Powell. Another guy, big time offensive lineman, 3 times first team All Pro. What was it like running behind Marvin Powell at times?
Hey, we had a great team all the way around, you know. Marvin Powell and Chris Ward. We had Randy Rasmussen up there, the guard, and Joe Fields.
Right.
And another guy that doesn't get enough credit, Dan Alexander.
Yes.
That guy was a monster, man. He was great. So we had a great team. We had a great team all the way around. And Marvin Powell and Chris Ward on the two ends.
Uh-huh.
We used to call them bookends.
Right.
Bookends, you know, like holding the thing, you know, together. Now, unfortunately, Chris Ward gets remembered because he used to get called for holding a lot of times.
A little more than Marvin. Marvin was a little more sound technique-wise, I thought.
Yeah. But Chris Ward was not bad. Chris Ward, they told Chris Ward, listen, don't let Richard Todd get hit from the blind side.
Right.
And he did. Chris did everything he could. Most of the time, it was great. excuse me. When he was getting beat, then he would grab a hold of the guy. And that was fine. I'm sure Richard appreciated it. You know, the fans didn't understand it, but Chris Ward was good, too. He was great.
I thought the offensive line was real solid. Marvin Powell, to me, he was an absolute monster. And I think a lot of people, in terms of Jet fans, they forget about that because they go with the glory positions, the running backs with Curtis Martin or the quarterbacks with Joe Namath or, you know, the sack exchange. And he was a guy extremely well accomplished.
The running backs get nothing. The quarterback doesn't have the time to throw the ball unless the offensive line is doing their job.
Right.
And Marvin Powell was the one that started making that happen, man, on that side. He was really good. He was big, you know. He was good, man. He was good.
And Feeder McNeil was out on the team, and Walker. Are you still in touch with those guys? Do you still talk to those guys, or Powell and them?
Very, very much so. Not Marvin Powell. I haven't seen him in a little bit, but Wesley is my guy. You know, we get together occasionally. Freeman, my buddy, he's so much fun, too. You know, we have all these golf tournaments we go to. Another one of my buddies on the defense is Bobby Jackson, you know. And you know what? What we started back then, it still goes on right now. Kenny Stroy, my buddies, I love these guys.
Right.
And they love me too, man. We had a good thing going. It was a wonderful experience of a lifetime. And I'm happy. I feel privileged to have been able to play.
Freeman and Wesley, were those two of your best friends on the team, or do you have anybody you were close with that we didn't mention?
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, all the guys, though. Freeman and Wesley, yeah, they were the ones. In fact, you go down to my basement there, and those are the first two photos you see, Freeman and Wesley. You know, Wesley, because we came in together his first year, it started. There's a story behind that, too. But he was a top draft choice. I was a free agent. But we became friends day one. Day one, and we've been friends since then. In fact, Wesley's son was over here with me today.
Right.
He's my godson, and he was over here today with us, him and his girl, watching the Jet game. So, yeah, we're definitely still in touch. We are definitely still.
Well, should I even say, I mean, you're a nice guy. Should I even bother asking what you thought about the game today?
What do you think the Jets need to do to change this around? Otherwise, they're going into a one in six disaster if it keeps up the way it's going.
And in 81, we had a great year.
No, you did. We're talking about today. You were watching the game today. What are your thoughts on the current Jet team?
In 81, we had a great year.
Oh, I gotcha.
That is great. Okay. You know what? I couldn't have said. I almost thought he was just replaying that over and over for me. Okay, you gotta give me. I got two more questions for you. The first one is, Walt Michaels gave you a tryout. What was it like playing for Walt Michaels? Can you tell us? Give us one good story about Walt Michaels.
Walt Michaels, the best thing I can say to describe Walt Michaels is that Walt Michaels did not say much. But when he said something, he meant it, and you responded to it.
Okay.
And that's just nothing but respect. He deserved it. He was worth, you know, he earned it. You know, he knew what he was talking about.
Right.
I liked him as the head coach and Joe Walton being the assistant coach. But I do want to go back to today.
Oh, you do? I thought you didn't want it. I thought that was your kind of
thing. It's okay if you don't want
to.
You know, Bruce, you guys had a great year in 1981.
Yes, great year.
No, I just did that kind of as a joke.
I know.
I think the Jets team today, they are not bad. They're right there. They're just missing it just a little bit, you know? I mean, you think about last week. They had two touchdown plays that didn't happen because of poor officiating.
Yes.
I don't know if you guys remember that one fumble. They had a fumble.
Oh, yes.
I'm well aware when they stripped the quarterback and he picked it up and ran it for a touchdown. DeMario Davis.
It blew the whistle early.
Yeah, that was a touchdown. And then earlier, before that, I forget what the play was, but it was another bad call by the officials.
Right.
And again, the Jets didn't, you know, so that's two touchdowns that they did not get. It would change the whole momentum, the tone of the game, and everything else.
Well, plus also,
first of all, I think Detroit Lions are a pretty doggone good team.
They are.
They're a good team. And we lost to them today 24-17, right? Isn't that what it was?
Yep.
Yeah. We were right there. Geno Smith, okay. He has his moments, but then you see wonderful moments. I mean, he's got a gun.
Yes.
He's got a gun. And the offensive line still, I think they do great. Chris Ivory Chris Johnson. I mean, come on, man. These guys are running the ball. And we were tested again today. When we get it together, I think we're going to be fine. I think we're going to be fine, you know, before the year is out.
Before the year started, I said the Jets are going to win 10 games this year. And I figured Chicago and Detroit, they're very winnable games. They're both at home. Chicago on Monday night. And it hasn't worked out like that. Now they go against San Diego, and then they play Denver the next two games. It's going to be two tough games. They go to San Diego. They have to win in San Diego.
You know what? For me, Bruce, the problem with me is I'm looking at it collectively, these three losses. The problem is it's not even the end of September. They've already played three home games. They've lost two of them. They haven't forced a lot of turnovers, no interceptions defensively. And the other thing is, you know, they built the 21-3 lead out in Green Bay. They failed to take advantage of that big opportunity in front of them. They lost the game.
Yep.
They come home. They got a chance to respond against the Bears. The Bears have two of their starting offensive linemen out. A number of guys on defense are out. They fail to take advantage and put a pounding on them. And then they come back today, back-to-back weeks at home, and they fail to go out. And for what it's worth, the first quarter of the season, they fail to go out and get a win that they need. Because if you're going to be a dominant team, you got to win games at home. And now they've already dropped two out of three. So I think collectively, that's why I'm really aggravated right now.
Well, again, now, you know, their backs are against the wall a little bit. And I think the guys are going to respond because we don't have a bad team. It's just, you know, like you said, when you play a lesser team, you know, you kind of relax a little bit. Well, they started off in Green Bay and they were ahead by so much. Then I think they relaxed a little bit. And Green Bay, on the other hand, they got fired up more. So it's just human nature, I guess, to some degree. But, you know, they need to know how to finish the job. They need to know how to finish the job.
I agree with you with Geno. I mean, Geno's, you know, sometimes he looks like a fantastic quarterback. Other times he looks like a first-year college quarterback. And it's just some of the moves he does. But do you think – now, I know a lot of fans are calling for Vic now to come in. And, like, you know, like, do you think the Jets should move or just stick with Geno and let him work out through like he did last year?
Well, listen, I think to bring Vic in prematurely – would be a bad move, you know, causes another quarterback controversy, which we do not need.
Right.
I think, you know, Geno is the quarterback, hopefully, of now and the future. So to pull him out too soon, it would not be a smart thing. You have to give him – now, listen, next week, I think the first three quarters, you know, we got to give him those first three quarters. After that, you know, if he's still, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
You know why I want your advice on this, Bruce? Because now I'm interested in this. Because, you know, when you came into the league, especially late 70s, you witnessed it, Walt Michaels going back and forth with Richard Todd and Matt Robinson. So what was that like? Was that a disruptive thing that went on, or did you not necessarily look at it as a bad thing?
Yeah, no, it can be disruptive. I mean, you know, I think in this situation it would work, you know, better than it would normally, because Vic is proven veteran. He's got nothing to prove. You know, he's much more mature.
Right.
And I think him, he's going to help Geno more than hurt Geno. So even if he comes in to play, unlike in situations where, you know, they're not, it's two young guys, you know, I think it's going to be okay, even if Vic comes in a little bit, because he's going to help. And besides that, guys, to put it bluntly, you know, it's a brother thing. You know, it's a brother thing. You know,
right.
You got two brothers, two black dudes,
yep.
And they're going to help each other out. I'm telling you now, they're going to help each other out. So when the time is right, when the coaches feel like the time is right,
right.
They'll bring Vic in, and I don't think it will cause Geno to be disheartened at all, really. Perhaps it'll be stimulating again, make him want to rise to the occasion.
Right.
So, you know, the quarterback situation, yeah, bad interceptions and, you know, not playing well sometimes, you know, it's bad. Geno's going to have to respond this next week, but I think we're just missing it.
We're not
far from it.
It's not all Geno's fault either. The secondary.
It's not. They've all taken a turn. Everyone's had a part in the losses. Coaches, players, everyone. It's just the quarterback gets the brunt of the blame, the bulk of the credit. I just want your thought on this is because I thought it before the season that I would have liked, if you paid $5 million for a seasoned veteran to come in, I didn't think it would be a bad thing for Geno to take a step back and let Vic at least compete honest for the for the quarterback spot. I think he would have won the job. He didn't, so be it. The reason I'm in favor of putting Vic in at quarterback is for this sole reason, Bruce. They're supposed to be built around their defense. And their run game is already showing you they can run the ball well. Ivory's staying healthy. He's running powerfully. Chris Johnson showed you that burst today when he took a busted play for a touchdown. You have a chance to put in a quarterback for whatever it's worth. He's the all-time leading rusher amongst quarterbacks. More rushing yards than anybody. Tarkenton, Randall Cunningham. I believe he's in like the top 100 rushers of
yes.
all time or top 50. I mean, the guy, when he drops back, if he can't pass, he's getting 15 yards. His only problem is staying healthy. So that's why I envision the idea of having him in the backfield with Johnson and Ivory. To me, that's extremely dangerous if you play it smart in terms of securing the ball and possession and play defense. Do you agree or you just rather wait?
Yeah, well, you know, hey, listen, I mean, there's always different ways of looking at things. I'm not going to dispute that and say it's not. That's not accurate, you
right.
know. Perhaps you're right, you know. But the coaches see and they know and they've made a decision
yeah.
to stick with Geno, and this is the way they're going to play it, you know. So you have to just go by what – I mean, they know a lot more than we know. So
I hope
so. We just have to support them. We have to support them, keep our faith, keep
yep.
believing, you know, and just hang in there until it's too late.
All right. I'm going to come off the ledge then. I'm going to take a breath and wait another week.
Bruce, there's one more question I want to ask you. I know you're the founder and director of a nonprofit organization, Heroes and Cool Kids, based in school systems throughout Jersey. Could you tell the fans about that?
Well, you know, I've done some things in my life that I feel pretty good about, but this, aside from my family, is absolutely at the top of what I've done constructively to make a difference in this world, in this life. And I feel very good about the successes we've had with Heroes and Cool Kids. It is a mentoring program, and I call it a three-tiered mentoring program because we have former pro athletes train high school students to be mentors to fifth-grade kids. And so it has just worked very well, and this is our 17th year.
Wow.
We receive letters, complimentary letters. We've been written up in magazines. It's just a great and wonderful program, and I say it all the time. After my family, it is the very best thing I have ever done in my life.
I think that's a great thing.
Me too.
Bruce, I got to be honest with you. I think you're doing great work there. I had heard that you started that in the late 90s. I think that's excellent. You got to give me one thing before we cut you loose. You've been great staying with us all this time. I listened to you the entire interview. I understand you didn't root for teams, this, that, and the other. You studied running backs. Give me at least one thing. As a running back in the NFL, what opposing running back did you admire the most for his abilities? Give me one guy.
I can tell you that right away. Totally fascinated. We were the same years. I just loved the way Sweet TD, Tony Dorsett.
Oh, all right.
Sweet TD, that's what I call him. Every
yeah.
time I see him, I say Sweet TD because he was he was poetry in motion. You know, you've heard that before.
Yeah,
I love
great.
The way Tony Dorsett ran the ball. He was fast. He would slide and slither through, you know, the defensive lines. I liked the way he played. He was one of my favorite ball players all time.
You know, that's interesting. My all-time favorite running back is Walter Payton. But to be honest with you, I thought you were going to pick out, because he came in the same time as you, I thought you were going to pick out the Tyler Rose, Earl Campbell. That's who I thought you were going to say. That's interesting, though. Tony does say he was an excellent running back. They're Hall of Famers, all of them.
Yeah, all Hall of Famers, yeah, of course.
Well, no. See, now, Earl Campbell was a bruiser. I mean, he was nasty. He was, but, you know, me appreciating it from the guy that kind of glided through, you know, avoided getting hit, Earl Campbell would go looking for trouble. Tony Dorsett was smooth and
right.
trying not to get hit.
I got you.
Speed and, you know, so I just like, I mean, of course, how can you not? Earl Campbell, he was
right.
great. He was awesome. But Tony was more like me than anything.
Okay.
And I appreciated him very much. Let me make one more comment before we go.
Go ahead.
You know, I said that the best thing I've ever done. Guys, not a religious show, but I got to tell you, I'm a born-again believer in Christ.
Okay.
And that is the best thing I've ever done in my life. So I just had to get that, and I didn't want anybody to
That's
make
wonderful,
any
yes.
mistakes,
That's okay.
You know.
No, it's a wonderful thing what you're doing for the kids, and we appreciate what you did for the Jets. And if you ever need any golf buddies or anything like that, because we're golfers, at least I am, you want to get a foursome going, if you need something for one of your fundraisers or anything, just give us a call.
All right. Well, thanks so much. I'll hold on to the number, guys.
And, Bruce, I told you already, I told the fans out there, longest touchdown run in team history. You also, and this is nothing to sneeze at, this is a great accomplishment, third all-time on the Jets in all-purpose yards, and that's only behind Curtis Martin and Don Maynard, two Hall of Famers. So congratulations on
Thank
a great
you.
Jet career, and I think it was great that you spent this time with us. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for doing your homework, man, because I didn't even know that one about behind Curtis Martin and Don Maynard.
Well,
man.
Now
that,
you know
that's
it.
Pretty cool.
Those are called
that's
wise facts.
Cool.
I do my own research, and you played for the Jets during a time when I first got into them, and you were on the team. Great years, 81, 82. I still wish that 82 Mud Bowl went the right way with that defensive run game, and I wish they would have pulled it off against Gibbs in the Super Bowl. I'm still waiting, but you were on one of my favorite teams to watch play, and we appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much, yeah.
Well, thank you so much, and let's go Jets, all right?
That's
go
right, ahead, let's go Jets.
Turn it around, turn it around.
All right, folks, there you have it. That was Bruce Harper, all-time kick returner in Jet history, third all-time all-purpose yards. On that note, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with NHL previews and Major League Baseball talk with Derek Jeter's retirement. Back after this.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WDBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA, or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip change. Use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York. Breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
All right, folks, we're back. A lot of Jet talk that first hour 15. Now we're going to switch to baseball. Not only baseball playoffs coming up, but we know this whole thing's been going on. Some people love it to death. Some people are nauseated by the overplay with this whole Jeter retirement tour. But we pay a little tribute. I don't have a Derek Jeter jersey, so I wore one of my favorite all-time Yankees jerseys.
And I am wearing Derek Jeter's jersey. And I'm a Met fan.
A Met fan is wearing Jeter's jersey.
Yes.
I am wearing Sherman Munson's jersey, number 15.
I'm giving my full respect for 20 years of fantastic baseball for Derek Jeter. I'm one of the Met fans that does not dislike Derek Jeter. But I know that they're going a little over the top with the patches, number two patches and everything. But the only thing I can think of is, like, when our parents watched Mantle play back in the day,
right?
They tell us, oh, we saw Mickey Mantle, one of the greatest Yankees of all time in their era. We could tell our kids we saw Derek Jeter play for 20 years, one of the greatest Yankees in our era of all time when they ask about it. I mean, look, the guy's sixth in all time on the list of hits. I mean, he's got so many Yankee records at home. It's, you know, he leads in hits, at-bats, games played, doubles, runs, stolen bases at home for the Yankee Stadium. I mean, he's played 20 years, never got in trouble. Good guy, good face for baseball. Never argued pitches, pitching strikes, strikes called to umpires, never ever got anything like that.
Gentleman off the field.
And now he's going to step off and go into the Hall of Fame, probably buy a team or something somewhere.
He might want to be an owner of a team. I don't know if he's going to be the kind of guy that wants to get on TV as a commentator on MLB Network.
I think he's going to be a team owner.
I think enough former players do that. I think he's going to want to go off for a while, do his own things. If he's anything like he was as a player, which is private, he's going to do some things on his own for a while. You know, he's just retiring. He's going to enjoy his time.
That last game at Yankee Stadium when he hit that single in the ninth, he couldn't have went off in a better way.
Did you watch it live? Because I didn't see it live.
I didn't see it live, no.
And I don't want to take any. I'm not taking anything. I think he's a great all-time Yankee. He's not one of my favorite all-time Yankees, only because I was a diehard Yankee fan as a kid up through high school. So once 1987, 88 rolled around, I was done being a diehard fan. So for me, you know, my all-time Yankees are Thurman Munson, Ron Guidry, you know, and Don Mattingly. And the three of those guys were career Yankees.
Right. I was always a Met fan.
I was a big Met fan, too, growing up through the end of high school. Yeah, you know, and those guys,
but
I appreciate Carter Gooden and Kingman guy.
I appreciate what Derek Jeter has done. He was a good fielder.
I do. What is your favorite Derek Jeter moment? And folks, if you want to call in and talk about any moments or your thoughts on the whole retirement thing, 631-888-8811. Call, take your call any point, rest of the show. Give me your favorite Jeter moment. Go ahead.
Well, this one that just went off on the ninth inning with 2-1. You know, that single was incredible. That
you mean the retirement hit?
No, the last hit of the base of the of his season at Yankee Stadium. It's like a movie. You couldn't have, if you handed somebody.
Is that
a
your favorite Derek Jeter?
No,
moment.
That's not my favorite.
I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I want you to think for a change and give me an answer.
Well, the one where he actually was against the A's.
Think the flip was your favorite?
The flip at home was incredible. He's had many.
All right.
He's got that one patent throw from shortstop in the hole. We twist his whole body around at first. He had a lot.
All right, listen.
He wasn't a big power hitter, but he was a good contact hitter.
All right, Jeter won a Rookie of the Year. He won 2 All-Star Game MVPs. He didn't win any regular season MVPs, but he did win 1 World Series MVP. So here's my favorite Jeter moment, and that is Game 4 against the Mets in the World Series. He only had 3 World Series home runs in his career, but one of them was when the series was 2-1 after the Mets had won a game to cut it to 2-1. And Game 4, Shea Stadium, Jeter stepped to the plate and drove one deep into the Met bullpen in left field to start the game. In my opinion, it was probably the most excited response I ever had for him as a Yankee. And in my estimation, it put the series to bed. From that point forward, it was over. If it wasn't over when Piazza bowed down to Clemens, that whole bat incident. It was over when Jeter led off that game with a home run. And I know this because I didn't necessarily pull for either team. I got aggravated when Piazza bowed down to Clemens. But I wasn't necessarily pulling for either team. My older sister, big Met fan. My younger sister, lucky for her, I turned her into a Yankee fan, despite what my dad might have done. I was on the fence, making fun of both, going back and forth. But after that Piazza incident with Clemens, I didn't want the Mets to win. And when Jeter led off game four with a home run, that was as excited as I got about the Yankees since I was a kid. And that's my favorite Jeter moment.
That's a
good one. Do you think about that, being a Mets fan?
That's pretty bad.
For you.
For me. And Piazza, I'm still disgusted that Piazza didn't rush the mound. Just talking about Piazza real quick.
Yeah.
And then I heard later they wrote a book, and then he said he had to take judo lessons because he was afraid of Clemens. That, to me, being a big power hitter as a catcher.
I don't even remember.
I have no respect for the guy.
It's horrible. Did he really say that?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
That's pretty pathetic.
But I do have some good Yankee moments.
This is why I find it interesting that you're wearing a Jeter jersey, because
I like
he won five World Series titles.
Yes.
The only series where he won the World Series MVP was against your New York Mets.
Okay, so
he buried
you.
What
do you want me to tell you? I'm paying.
He buried you.
I'm paying respect to the man for 20 years.
You're wearing his jersey.
Yeah, I'm paying respect
to
the man.
He batted 409 in that series. 9 for 22. 6 runs, two doubles, a home run, 2 ribbies. Man, he buried you. 2 triples.
I know what he did. I know what he did.
He batted 409.
He's a lifetime 310 batting average. Today he went, I think he went
now, my only complaint with people who talk about Jeter is this. Do not, and I heard ESPN, I don't even care what the reference was, but they were comparing him to Wayne Gretzky and Michael Jordan in some regard. And please stop. He didn't even make our debate a month ago for the top 10 ball players of the last 40 years. Nobody should ever compare him to Jordan or Gretzky. Come on, stop. Those guys won countless MVPs.
I will tell you this. He's probably going to go into the Hall of Fame at 100%.
He may. Rivera might, too.
Rivera might, too.
Rivera deserves it before him, actually. But he might. But what does that mean? Tom Seaver has the highest percentage, and he's not the greatest
ball player
of all time.
And Nolan Ryan second.
And neither is Ryan. Ryan didn't even make our top 10.
Ryan had the strikeouts, and Ryan had 7 no-hitters.
Do you measure that percentage of the vote by how great a guy is as an athlete?
Well, how else would you?
Listen, teams win championships. He was a part of 5 championships. He's a great all-time Yankee. He is as clutch as they come. But if you take away those World Series, you know, he played in New York. He didn't play in Houston. I told you to look it up. If you took away those World Series, his career reads no different than Craig Biggio's.
Well, I think it's
reads
even,
no different.
I think it's even
statistically.
Harder.
And that's the problem. If you're going to debate, listen, the greatest shortstop of all time, you could argue all around he's the greatest shortstop. It would be hard for you to get past Cal Ripken in that debate because he won regular season MVPs, the power aspect. Jeter was a better defender. People get on Jeter up to the day of his retirement about his defense. Let me tell you something out there, folks, about Jeter and his defense. Because this, I will defend him till the end of time. There are only 3 shortstops in Major League history that played 2,500 or more games at shortstop and had a fielding percentage of .975 or better. And those are, in order of fielding proficiency, Omar Vizquel, Ozzie Smith, and Derek Jeter. So, durability, longevity, and proficiency, I'm sorry, he's an excellent fielding shortstop.
Excellent.
He deserved his 5 gold gloves. Is he as good a shortstop defensively as the Wizard or Omar? No. But he's right there with them if you're going to draw up stats to compare. Because all this other stuff they came up with, war and this, that, forget it. It's garbage. Guy had a great career. Unfortunately, you know, he did it a different way. In terms of being an all-time Yankee. You know, behind the big 5, those guys all had power. And Berra had some defense behind the plate, too, and 3 MVPs. This guy did it without the power. But 200 hit seasons, runs scored, stolen bases. You know, he's got a lot of team records.
Right.
No
a lot
MVPs.
Of, a lot of team records.
But you know what? Well over 3,000 hits. But, yes, he only led the league in runs scored once. He led the league in most hits twice. Other than that, he didn't lead the league in anything. So I understand people who get a little aggravated with the overplay of his greatness, but I also get, and I think I get more aggravated with people who really try to downplay his defense. Because He was proficient. Wait till you have to watch the next shortstop come into town and play.
It's going to be tough. Dodge.
This guy's been on hold a while. Rich from Manhattan's on the air. Rich, how are you doing, buddy?
Oh, there's a lot to talk about.
Well, where do you want to start?
How you doing?
You're a staple call to the show. Where do you want to start?
Favorite Derek Jeter moment.
All right, give us your favorite Derek Jeter moment. Go ahead.
Now, remember, I'm a Mets fan.
I know what you are, Mr. Seaver Jr. Go ahead.
Game 7 against Arizona when Mariano threw to him and the Diamondbacks came back to win.
What'd he do, Olay it?
What'd he get the ball?
Did he Olay it like Dorn?
He couldn't get the ball. Two Hall of Fame unanimous choices that you're mentioning.
Yep.
They blew the World Series in 2001 after a great pitching performance by Roger Clemens.
Now that sounds like a real Mets
Rich,
fan.
That sounds like a real Mets fan.
So you're saying that Jeter and Rivera deprived Alfonso Soriano of being a Yankee legend like Chris Chambliss back in 76. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
That's your favorite Jeter moment?
Absolutely.
All right, I got you.
Now, my second favorite, the thing I will give Jeter, he's a great player. He will go to the Hall of Fame, obviously, but this 100% vote, there's always a guy who says no one is perfect. If Babe Ruth, Joe DiMaggio couldn't get in on the first ballot, then no one deserves. There's always someone out there who will not vote for you.
Yep, no, I got you. Okay? It's true.
But is he the greatest shortstop ever? No, they say it's still Honus Wagner.
Yeah, but now you're going, none of us saw him play.
But the historians say he's still the one.
Why is he still the one? The game was
they
so different.
He is.
Didn't they play barehanded back then? I mean, what were they doing back then in terms of baseball?
They say he is.
All right,
That matters.
But what about a more recent comparison? Don't you think that the guy, if you're going to look at all-around shortstop play, the tough comparison
he's
would
very
be
consistent. Putting
him ahead of Ripken would be tough, right, all time?
Oh, no, he's got a much higher batting average. If Ripken didn't have the speech, he wouldn't have got in the first the streak. He wouldn't have got in as a first ballot. No way.
Not with his home run total?
No.
And his defensive abilities? Nothing? No?
No.
Well, Gene has a lifetime 310 batting average now.
He's got a great batting average.
Right.
What, only five people have more hits than him?
Yeah.
And all of them except for Pete Rose played when it was black and white?
Yep.
That's pretty strong.
Yeah, but Ripken won two MVPs in a rookie of the year.
Well, more important than Derek Jeter is...
Whoa, let's finish this topic. You're telling me that Ripken doesn't even compare to him? I don't think... See, that's the problem that people have with going overboard.
No, I don't think he does.
But you can't say that. That's impossible.
Ripken is there because of the streak.
Ripken had 1,700 ribbies. What are you talking about?
He's there because of the streak, more than anything.
Really? The home runs had nothing to do with it? The 3,000 hits?
He
is one of those guys up there in the top 20 in hits.
He's the first of the larger power-hitting shortstop.
So that stands for nothing that he had power for a shortstop? He hit the most home runs of any shortstop.
He's the first, and I'm sure there will be others.
I'm not even a big Ripken
guy.
I'm not a big Ripken guy, but I would debate those two against each other all around shortstop play. I would. Because Jeter's a better defender by far.
The people who knock Jeter... With the whole thing about, well, if he played in Kansas City, there would be no championships, and he'd be a better hitting version of Freddie Potack.
Well, see, no. That's going overboard in the other direction.
You know, maybe he would be considered nationwide to be like a Paul Molitor or a Robin Yount, both Hall of Famers who played in small markets.
Yeah, but Robin Yount won MVPs, though.
Yes, he did.
Well, Jeter didn't.
But Jeter should have the year that Mornell won.
You could say he should have all you want. That doesn't mean anything, though.
He should have won. A lot of people thought he should have won.
All right.
The Jets, I share the great Bruce Harper's optimism on the team.
Okay.
Now, I was upset about today. You're right. It was the defense that, you know, they just gave Stafford the whole field. He just marched down the field. Third downs, they couldn't stop them.
At the wrong time, they didn't stop them.
It was, but the thing that annoyed me the last game on Monday and the game today is when the running game is going great, for some reason, they go back to the passing game, which was not going.
I agree with you, Rich.
I just don't understand that.
I agree.
Chris's have been really good running the ball.
They've been excellent. But at times, there were a couple of spots where the offensive line cost them and put them in a third and long where they needed to keep running, and now all of a sudden I could see a coach calling for a play action or a pass play. Yeah.
You know, I have
it's hard to criticize that too much. That's not why they lost the game.
I have no faith for the next game in San Diego.
Right.
And so then they go to Denver, then they play New England.
Well, they're playing Denver here. And only because it's here, I'm willing to give the Jets a chance.
All right. That secondary with Peyton Manning?
You're putting him at 1-4 before
Maybe
they come back home, right?
Will play like he did in February at the Meadowlands.
Well, listen, that Seattle defense plays worlds different than the Jet defense. I don't care what anybody says.
But we'll see what happens. But the 10 wins I thought they'd get, two of them were the last two games, so I guess that's out the window.
That's what I said, the same thing, Rich.
But those games were on the road.
So you guys are back to 8-8?
Bears and Lions, but they were home.
Two winnable games, and they lost them.
The Jets are playing all these good teams at home. So that's why I gave them 10 wins for the year, because I thought their home schedule was favorable.
Can they win the division at 8-8, Rich? Is that what you're trying to ask now?
It's not going to happen.
So
now,
are you going to chalk this up to another year where the Pats win a title?
They'll win the East.
Was that?
The Patriots will win the East.
I'd like to see anybody else but them win.
I can hear the pain in his voice.
I would love to see Buffalo pull it out somehow. A young team like that, but it's not going to happen. The Pats will win, probably.
I don't think much of the
And they're not that good. They didn't look that good. I'll see what happens Monday. I hope Kansas City destroys them. But,
that'd be nice to see. But yeah. I don't think much of the Bills, and I don't think much of the Dolphins either.
That division.
Despite them.
Isn't that good.
Really dumping all over Oakland.
Rich, I don't want you to hang up because I want to talk about one thing close to our hearts.
Well, we got to talk about the puck.
Yes, and that's it right there. What do you think? What do you think of the outcome of this coming up season with the Islanders? What do you think is going to happen? Because you are a diehard fan like me.
I haven't really finished analyzing the league yet. I do like Halak and goal.
Right.
I think Johnson was pretty good on Friday in Brooklyn at Barclays. But I really don't see depth on offense. I did like Pulak on Friday on defense. I like Griffin a lot on Wednesday.
How do you know? You must have been at the game because I know they didn't put it on TV.
I saw Wednesday's game.
You went to it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lucky for you because apparently the Islanders don't broadcast their exhibition games.
But
I love how Islander fans cross over there because I don't want to hear this rah-rah garbage with this team.
But I don't know.
Do you think Reinhardt makes a team?
I don't know if they're going to make be within the top eight. I don't know yet. There's still another week.
Well, let's go through it real quickly, Rich.
What?
Let's go through it real quickly.
Rich, I have one date penciled in my calendar, 10/14/2014. That's the game I can't wait for when start the season, when they play the Rangers.
Rich, for a guy who's such a big hockey guru, like the Mel Kiper of drafting, you have no thoughts on how this conference is going to go?
I do.
Not yet.
Really?
I doubt they're going to be in the top eight.
Well, the only reason I don't think so is because I think that Washington's going to be much better this year. The one team I'm suspect on, because of all the turmoil, just on losing one series to the Rangers, I don't necessarily like what Pittsburgh did with their franchise. Changing the GM, the coach, even the change in personnel. And they're still banged up. Coming into the season, they're still banged up. Malkin ain't skating, from what I hear. Crosby's still nursing some injuries. A few of these guys, and they're going back with the same goalie, and they lost two defensemen.
Crosby was supposed to play yesterday, but his grandmother died. He had to go back home.
I understand that, but these guys are still nursing injuries, these guys. That's not a good sign. Letang had a stroke last year, so you'll never know how healthy he really is.
I don't know how he's playing. But then again, Teddy Bruschi came back from a stroke.
I understand, yeah.
You know, that's pretty amazing what the doctors can do.
But how much of a drop-off can Pittsburgh really have anyway?
I think Pittsburgh is still going to be good. I think the team that, of the eight that made the playoffs in the East, I think the team that could drop is Detroit.
You think Detroit drops? You don't think they're healthier coming in this year?
I
know Datsyuk got hurt recently, but...
He got hurt. He's going to be... But that's only 3-4 weeks. So that's 2 weeks in the regular season. There's a week and a half left in preseason.
You know, they were a team like Pittsburgh. Okay. Pittsburgh lost the most games to manpower, you know, with injuries, and Detroit was right up there. They still made the plays. I think those teams, if they're healthy or alone, will be in the playoffs.
What about Columbus?
Columbus is on the rise. Once they get Ryan Johansson signed, they'll be okay.
What about Philly now?
Philly is...
I think Philly's a playoff team.
You're getting Cardinal in the room more as well as on the ice. I don't understand.
I think Philly's a playoff team.
And Braden Schenn hasn't been what I thought he'd
be. He's been pretty good, though. He's been pretty good. And Claude Giroux, like your boy Tavares, he's in the MVP talk.
And speaking of
last couple of years.
When he comes into the Collie.
Right.
I'd like to hear the Islander fans serenade him with a little na 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 Giroux in honor of him pinching that cop's butt in the off season.
Oh yeah.
I think that would be pretty cool to
you'd like that?
Give him a little serenade.
I'm predicting the Islanders get at least 15 more points. They finished with 79 last year. They're gonna end up with 15 more this year, and it's gonna be borderline. They're gonna be right in the teetering. 94 points is fine with me, and that's enough to get into the playoffs this year.
I don't know. The way they do the wins, they should change the way a win is. But you know, you get a point for an overtime loss.
Oh, listen, stop complaining. Loss. It's the same for every team. The bottom line is, you got a superstar in Tavares, and Hakpozo has rescued his career. If Franz Nielsen keeps playing the way he did last year, you just need some young guys to step up and put some pucks in the net, put some points on the
board. Reinhardt.
Instead of turning out like a Josh Bailey.
I think.
But your problems are on defense, and you know that. Halak has to prove that he can play 60-plus games. He had a good playoff run with Montreal, and he split time with Elliott in St. Louis. He has to prove that he can shoulder 60 games, but the defense in front of him is really going to be where they make their mark. Yeah, a lot of youth there, Rich. A lot of youth. So if they don't come into form, it's going to be problems. He can give up a lot of goals as usual, don't you think?
I don't think he has to play 60. I think he could play 50, and Johnson's good for 30.
50-30 split? Really?
I think that's good enough.
I don't think that's what he's brought here.
I think it's very much going to be like Resch and Smith before the Stanley Cup years.
Listen, I'll say the same thing about the Islanders I said about the Rangers last year. And the Rangers didn't pay the price by missing the playoffs. But the Rangers were not a very good team at home.
But the
Islanders have to be better at home. They do not win games at home. And they just need, if they can, listen, whoever steps on the line, if Ocpozo keeps playing the way he did last year, whoever steps on that line with those two guys, he should benefit and put up points just by mere presence with Tavares on the ice with him.
It's going to be strong.
All right, so Strom should be a big point producer if he plays on that line.
But the guy on offense that really is the difference between 2 years ago and last year, the performance, when Michael Grabner is going well,
right,
they win.
Well, he wasn't that good last year, though, right?
He wasn't that good last year, but the year before, he was dynamite.
Yeah, how about your team? How about playing better in November? Because usually the Islanders get hammered in November.
They've got to get off to a good start.
Yeah.
They can't be 10 points out by election day.
Do you know the Islanders, Buffalo was the worst team at home, and the Islanders were second and worst at home.
They were horrible at home.
They were horrible.
They got to be a better home team.
13-9-9 at home. They were 21-18-2 away. I mean, they have to pump that up.
Yeah, without studying this thing inside now, we don't have the time to dissect it. But these are the teams I think are playoff teams in that conference. I think Pittsburgh is a playoff team. I think Tampa Bay is definitely a playoff team. I think the Rangers and the Flyers are playoff teams. I still got to give Detroit a nod for the playoffs. Along with Boston. That's six teams right there, at the least. You know?
Well, Stefan's out now.
Is Toronto going to be much better this year? Maybe. Columbus? You know, maybe. Columbus is a team. Columbus might take a step back before they take a step forward like the Islanders wound up doing last year. I don't know yet. But I know there's nothing set in stone with that franchise
really
outside of Bobrovsky. He's an excellent goaltender.
I think Columbus is going to be really good with Ryan Murray in the second year on defense. They're going to be really good.
Ryan Murray's there with Tootin and Johnson. Okay. So you think their defense will be a little stronger?
I think Ryan Murray is the stud.
What about up front, this guy, Nathan Horton? He's just been one injury after another.
He's healthy.
Well, I don't even think he's going to be starting the season.
He's not.
All right, so that's not good.
But they're going to be built on defense and goaltending.
And what about this young guy that's sitting out because he wants a contract?
They're going to sign Johansson.
You don't think that's a problem?
Come on, all teams go through this with young players.
He's trying to rape the franchise.
He's going to play.
What's he had, one big season, and now he wants money, you know?
He was what, fourth pick overall in the draft?
So what? He's got to do it. Listen, he does not deserve the kind of money he's asking for. He's got to do it more than 1 year, Rich.
I think they should give it to him.
Good luck.
They got to give that fan.
They sound like they're going to be tough. But I don't see any wavering on their part with that guy, Johansson. No way.
All teams give in.
Well, maybe. Maybe not.
It's especially when they got no one else scoring. They give in.
They may roll the dice and see what kind of start they get off to.
Twice in their franchise history,
right.
They had momentum. They barely lost to Pittsburgh. They got to give the fan base something.
They barely lost it. They lost in six games. They didn't take.
They barely lost in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, just like the Islanders barely lost to Pittsburgh. They lost.
They were close games. But
So if that guy sits out, who's carrying that team offensively? Dubinsky? Anisimov?
They've got to give the fan base something.
Well, I understand. Guy should play out his contract. He's getting a bridge contract. He's going to be different because he put up one big season? I don't think that's going to work.
I think it's the first of many he's going to have.
I hope so for his sake.
I think he will.
That team, there's nothing set in stone. Let me tell you something right now. If Columbus is a playoff team and Toronto is, then the Islanders definitely ain't making the playoffs. That's all I'm going to say
about that.
I
think it's an upgrade.
You and this will see. You're big on predictions like 10 minutes before they happen.
You never
make a prediction beforehand.
I said they're going to make the playoffs. I'm telling you that now.
Yeah, just like you said, the Jets would be 10-6.
Hey, I picked the Mets for 75 wins. They got 79.
That's a good job.
There you go.
So the Mets did better than I thought, too. All right, before we cut you loose, because you're really not inciting me enough.
I want to hear one thing from Rich.
Give me a Stanley Cup prediction there, Rich.
I haven't figured it out yet.
Oh, come on. The season starts in a couple of weeks.
I like to wait till the rosters are fixed. Guys get hurt, you know?
Rich, who are the young kids that you went to when you went to the game Wednesday?
This isn't a magazine where you got to put it to print a month and a half.
Right. Exactly.
Listen, this is our last show before the season starts. So as of today, and you reserving the right to change your opinion, who do you think today is going to win the Stanley Cup?
I would say the Chris Kreider-led New York Rangers.
Look at that.
No.
He's got the same prediction as me.
Kreider's going to have a great year.
I got the Rangers going back to the Cup and beating the LA Kings in a rematch. That's what I'm going with.
The Rangers will never get that far.
Why not?
They won't.
Okay, there you go.
Their defense is solid.
There you go.
I think Kreider is going to get that 40-goal year.
Boyle's too old.
Boyle is old, but I think he's steady.
You guys lost the fifth-round pick so that we can sign him.
Oh yeah, but when we got him for the fourth round,
I'm just telling you what your team did.
It wasn't a fifth round.
Your team gave what did you give him, a fourth round pick?
Whatever it is.
All right, well your team gave us a draft pick so that he could come to New York and play for the other team.
But I'll say Blackhawks over Rangers.
Oh, you changed it now.
What?
You're saying Blackhawks over the Rangers.
Yeah, Blackhawks over the Rangers.
You said the Rangers were gonna win.
I'm an Islander fan. I can't let that go.
You already said it. We have it on tape.
No, he did not, Rich. Hey, Rich.
Too late.
Eddie, 10 days to change that.
I'm saying the Islanders make the playoffs, but I want to ask you, other young kids that you saw on when you went to the game Wednesday, who do you like out of those kids?
Tell us who you like there, buddy.
I liked Griffin Reinhardt a lot.
Okay.
Does he make the
team? Nice-looking defenseman. He's going to make the team?
Oh, I think he will.
What about Strome? How does he look?
I think he'll make it. I think I'd say 20 games in the year, he might be on the first line.
Does Bailey have anything left in the tank? Or I should say, does he have anything to offer?
What did they do with Bailey?
They ruined him.
What did they do with him?
They ruined him from the beginning. They rushed him. It's too late. It's over.
Should they get rid of him then?
Now, the guy that I
gave him a big contract
that I watched last night, Nito Niederreiter, why isn't he still on the Islanders?
That's a good question.
I still haven't gotten an answer why he's in Minnesota.
He's still celebrating that Game 7 winner against
Colorado. He had a goal and an assist yesterday.
That's a good question that we all...
Can you listen? You gave up draft picks for guys you couldn't sign with Vanek and Boyle. Can you remind me, who did the Islanders get in the trade with Niederreiter? Who did they get for Nino?
Clutterbuck.
I don't know.
Clutterbuck. That's another great trade for Gart Snow. Way to go, fellas. Your team's really going places. They stink.
No, there's a reason why they trade them, which we don't know. But there's behind the scenes.
Poor handling of the roster with this team. I'm sorry.
Well, maybe why is this guy still coach?
What, you're going to blame Capuano for the roster moves?
I don't think he's a good coach.
Well, look at the team he's coaching.
I don't think he's a good
coach. He did pretty good when Tavares was healthy. He got to the playoffs and went six games against Pittsburgh, didn't he now?
When they're down by one, he pulls too early. They always give up.
That's your only complaint about this guy is pulling the goalie too early. They all do it. I saw it go on in the playoffs. That's the only thing you ever bring up with Capuano is that he pulls the goalie too early. That makes him a bad coach?
Your
opinions and breakdowns are stellar here. That's great.
The Russians don't believe it.
Oh, come on. He's got that team playing hard. He's got them scoring goals. The only problem that he has, if I'm going to evaluate him as a coach, is his team blows too many leads. That, he's got to knuckle down with. He's got to knuckle down and hammer home the discipline and defensive, you know, planning with this team.
All right, Rich, real quick.
Let Dougie coach.
Who do you like in the West, Rich, real quick?
Chicago. Chicago.
No, the Kings are going to go back.
Oh,
to
you
Chicago.
Said Chicago. He's saying Chicago versus.
I got LA.
I'm saying
the
Boston versus the Kings.
I got the Kings and the Rangers going.
I'm going the Kings and Boston.
Right back.
And I'm saying the Islanders will make the playoffs. The Islanders will make the playoffs.
I think the Ducks might be the number two.
Just because they picked up Kessler. I knew you were a big Ryan Kessler fan.
Goalie, John Gibson.
Oh, yeah, Gibson. He's a Hall of Famer in the making.
I think Gibson's really good.
He's good. But that's not the reason.
By giving up on Hillier.
They went through how many goalies last year in the playoffs? Three?
Don't forget something. L.A. has not really changed their team.
Won gold medals for the U.S. junior team. He's a very up-and-coming goalie.
They picked up Ryan Kessler. That'll be huge for them. They lost a lot of guys, too. They had a lot of changeover, by the way.
Well, Saku Koivu retired. So did Timu.
Yeah, Timu had a lot of good things to say about Spanky, the head coach, didn't he?
I don't know if getting Nick Nino to get Kessler was the best thing.
Did you see those things that he had to say about the head coach?
What was that?
Timu, you mentioned Timu. Did you see what he had to say about Spanky, the head coach?
About Gabby?
The head coach, yeah.
No, I didn't hear it.
You didn't see that he wrote a book and he pounded Boudreaux in the book?
No.
Oh, all right, well.
I know he read a book. I heard people talk about it. I didn't know what he said.
Not a big fan of Boudreaux's coaching skills.
No.
How about Dallas, though? Don't you find them to be an interesting team this year?
Well, I like Sagan a lot.
Well, I know you're a big Sagan fan, but they added your other boy. Now you got Spezza down in Dallas. I ask you a question. I want a response. What do you think about Dallas's makeover? One of your all-time favorite guys that you resent the Islanders for not drafting, Jason Spezza, is in Dallas. Tell me, do you like the dynamic down there with that team?
Well, they didn't not draft him. They traded the pick where they could have taken him.
Why you resent
them.
I know.
They could have got Connor McDavid or Jack Eichel next year if they didn't make this stupid trade with Buffalo with Vanek.
And there you go.
The question I like to know, if I ask Scott Snow one question, I'd be like, did you know, did Vanek guarantee that he was going to come and sign with you? Why did you give up a first, second, and Molson for this guy? And then after he left, he wanted to leave at the end, which is understandable. Business is business. He tried signing him again. When he was a free agent. And Vanek said no.
Should have just kept Molson.
Should have kept Molson.
Sometimes the best trade you make are the ones
you don't.
And that's one that shouldn't have been
done. I agree with you 100%.
All right, what do you think about Barry Trotz in Capitals land? You got Ovechkin coming back with Backstrom, right?
Ovechkin.
Barry Trotz, a very, very well-respected coach with all those years since the inception of Nashville. What do you think about Washington? They added two defensemen. Niskanen's a good puck-moving defenseman. You got him with Carlson, right?
Well, is Mike Green going to be healthy?
Mike Green's going to be there, and you got Orpik providing muscle in front. What do you think about their chances this year?
They got to have more scoring depth, second, third line.
I think if Holtby becomes the goalie that they were hoping for.
I like Holtby.
Going back a couple years, if he becomes the goalie they're hoping for, I think Barry Trotz is going to open a lot of eyes. I think they're going to be a team.
I think they're the one that's going to replace Detroit as one of the eight.
I think they're definitely a playoff team. I don't know if I would kick Detroit to the curb just yet.
And in Nashville,
you know, they got a lot of guys, Rich, that are healthy that weren't healthy last year, like Johan Franzen, Zetterberg. All these guys missed a ton of hockey last year, just like the Penguin guys that got banged up.
Well, look,
You know, Jimmy Howard, if he gets back to playing the way he normally plays, he wasn't very good last year, considering his previous few years. This team with Cronwall, he's a stud on the point physically. Erickson's back there. Quincy, I don't know. I like Babcock. He's a good coach. I don't know if I would be kicking them to the curb just yet.
He's a good coach, but he's going to be a lame duck. They're not offering him a contract renewal.
All right, so
he might leave. He might retire. He might go elsewhere.
Well, if they don't make the playoffs and he leaves, he's going to get a job right away. The guy's a winner, right?
He's a winner.
Where have I heard that before?
Got Niedermeyer.
What about the Flyers?
They're the Flyers. They always do better than I think they will.
If Mason's healthy, do you like their chances this year?
The who?
Mason.
If Mason's healthy, he suffered through little injuries towards the end of the year. He didn't come back into that first round series until a couple of games in.
I think they could get by with him and Ray Emery. But they're going to miss Hartnell.
I don't think Hartnell's as big a loss as you think. You think he's a big loss?
I think he's big in the room. I think it's going to be bigger in the room than on the ice.
All right.
And they really have to hope Braden Schenn lives up to his potential, which he hasn't so far.
Awesome. Yeah, but you know what? Wayne Simmons is excellent, and Giroux, he's a skilled
Giroux's very good.
Skilled point guard.
He's got to stop pinching the car.
And Berube's got a full year. You know, Berube took over. They were 1-7. They were playing horrible last year when Laviolette got fired. And he took over, did a real good job getting them back in contention and then into the playoffs. I mean, that was a bad start. They were, you know, they were reeling right from the get-go.
Peter's going to do a good job with Nashville.
Who?
Peter Laviolette.
That's who the analyst should have went out and got.
Yeah, I believe so.
Brought him back.
I think he'll do a real good job with them.
He's going to make them more offensive team, more exciting team with Seth Jones coming down.
Just hear me out about the Islanders. Now we got.
Why are we talking? We're not talking about the Islanders.
I just want to talk about one thing before.
Why?
Before
Rich about this lousy team? Without
Tavares was out. You got him, and now you got a goalie. You're going to guarantee they had 34 wins last year. They're going to get another 10 wins out of that deal.
They don't have depth in
their
scoring.
Their defense is the problem.
They got Tavares and they
score
got a goalie.
Enough goals, Rich. They don't play good defense. You can't say they don't score enough goals.
I'm telling you,
they don't have the depth.
Depth. But they produce the goals. They don't stop the other team from scoring. How many leads did they blow last year?
Maybe they could trade Bailey for a good defenseman.
Listen, they got a lot of youth on the point, guys that have to develop, especially Reinhardt if he makes it with DeHaan. And I know Rich ain't a big DeHaan guy.
No, I saw DeHaan on NHL Live this week. And all right.
What's wrong with DeHaan? I think he's doing a great job. I think he did a good job last year.
Well, what about Montreal? You think they can take a step back? Rich, what about Montreal? They could take a step back. I got to be honest with you. I was impressed with what they did last year.
They lost guys as free agents.
Pacioretty took a pounding from your boyhood idol, Guy Lafleur. Took a pounding for not producing enough in the playoffs through the semifinals. He scored 5 goals. I wonder what Guy Lafleur would have to say about Rick Nash.
Pacioretty, I think, had a career year. He's very good. I don't think he's going to be better than what they had. The guy that they're going to really have to count on to score, because they're going to have to score, is Galchenyuk. He's really
good. Galchenyuk's pretty good. He's a young guy, but he's good.
He's really good.
But what do they got past that? You think Parenteau's going to be a big contributor?
No, they don't have enough.
I think I like P.K. Subban. I think he's a monster on the power play back there on the blue line, and Price is an excellent goalie. But they're a team I'd be looking at. They might take a step back. That's one team I would be a little leery of. Out west, Rich, do you think there's anybody else to worry about outside the Kings? I would say the Kings, the Blackhawks, and let's say, you know, Anaheim. And what about Colorado? They, great young team last year, won the division. They have the youth. They got the core young superstars. They go out and they add Jerome McGinley, right, and Daniel Briere. What do you think about their chances? You think they could put themselves in that discussion with those other three teams?
No.
No. Okay.
No, I think they lack on defense. And when you talk about Briere and McGinley, they're names, but they're old. They're just names.
Well, they're providing a veteran presence, Rich, something they didn't have.
You know, but McKinnon, they'll go as far as McKinnon.
McKinnon's excellent.
He's great.
Duchesne's excellent.
You see,
Landis Gogg's excellent. They are stacked. Unlike the Islanders, they drafted in great fashion. They were great in their drafts.
Did you see that they played in Quebec?
I love how you guys just gloss over this.
I don't understand why you keep coming back to the Islanders.
Because you wanted to talk about them so much.
But why are you comparing us to Colorado?
I'm comparing you because Colorado did a much better job drafting when they had all those top picks. That's why.
Did you see the Avalanche? They played in Quebec City, their former home.
I didn't see it, but I heard about it, yeah.
The Canadiens, and the crowd was mostly rooting for the Avalanche.
Because they're the old Quebec Nordique. Come on.
They want the team back.
It's called loyalty, Rich. Something you don't have. Or do you consider yourself a loyal guy?
What's that?
He's saying, you know. Yeah.
What's that? I said it's called loyalty. They're rooting for the old Quebec Nordique franchise.
I'm realistic about my team.
All right.
I'm not a pom-pom waiver.
Not like the guy in front of me is what you're saying.
Oh, he's a pom-pom waiver.
See? What do you have to say about that, Sweeney?
All his teams. Hey, what was
Tell him, Sweeney.
In June, you said the Mets were going to make the playoffs. I said no chance.
Yeah, you did say that, Sweeney.
I did. I drink the Kool-Aid, Rich.
I can't drink Kool-Aid.
He guzzles Kool-Aid by the gallon. He guzzles it by the gallon.
Especially with the Jets. I do drink the Kool-Aid with the Jets, and I do drink the Kool-Aid with the Islanders.
You're worse with the Mets. You and Jake Brown, you guys are horrible with the Mets.
Hey, next year the Mets are going to do
it. It's always next year. What are you guys, taking over for the Dodger fans?
Okay. I'm just saying. All
next
right.
Next year. Let's call them bums, too.
Well, L.A. hasn't changed. L.A. left their team alone, and I think L.A.'s got another shot to repeat again.
Yeah, come on, Rich. The L.A. Kings, they unscathed their roster. Gavrik took less money. He's willing to make less money than Ryan Callahan's getting in Tampa.
Well, look,
just because he
really
said,
good.
And
it's
I quote, Marion Gaberick said,
three?
I've made enough money, is what he said. I've made enough money.
He likes hanging out.
Now it's time to win again. That's unbelievable.
He got the best defenseman in the league.
And the goalie.
He got Drew Doughty,
and
Jonathan
the best,
Quick.
You got the best goalie
if
in the
Dustin
league.
If Dustin Brown gets back to playing the way he did a couple of years ago, forget about it.
I don't think he's the best goalie in the league, but.
Who, Jonathan Quick?
No.
Well, he won two Stanley Cups.
Who's the best?
Who is the best goalie in the league?
I don't think he's the best goalie in the league.
Really?
No.
If he's not number one, he's number two.
He won a Stanley Cup with a bum wrist. He needed surgery. He played through an injury.
But I don't think he's the best.
He hates Jonathan Quick.
I don't hate him.
Yes, you do. You dislike him.
The guy's got two cups.
You don't even want to give him credit for how good he is.
I still think
you're a disgrace to hockey talk.
Resides on 33rd Street.
What's that?
The best goalie in the NHL resides on 33rd and 8th.
What is that going to mean? Rich, who are the best goalies to never win a Stanley Cup? Tell me. We've talked about this.
Tony Esposito.
And who else?
And the guy at 33rd and 8th.
Before him, who else?
Well, my boy Luongo is...
Eddie Jackman. No, Luongo doesn't get in this debate. The two best goalies to never win a Stanley Cup are Eddie Jackman and Tony Esposito.
I think it's going to be very...
And if King Henry goes through a career without winning a cup, how devastating should I view that as a Ranger fan, having two of the best goalies of all time to never win a cup for my franchise? Don't you think that would be a little disheartening?
They're your team. It's your problem.
Really?
There you go, Rich. Tell them. I hope you suffer.
Really?
All right. Your two best goalies in your franchise history are better, way better than the one that did win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
And the other
one
from the biblical days.
It's
like
true.
Kerr and...
Now, forget about those guys. That's a whole different era of hockey. Forget that. They didn't even have curves. Come on, stop. They had to shovel the ice to play on fresh ice. Or whatever.
Lou Gehrig was going to games.
Yeah, he was going to games. It was great. It was such a great story. I love the things that have you so happy in life. Lou Gehrig went to hockey games. It's so exciting.
He did. He used to go often.
So what?
He was a big fan.
Mike Richter won a Stanley Cup, and that's all that matters. Just like all that matters is that Jeter won world titles with the Yankees. Nobody cares about anything else.
Hey, Rich, just to tell you something. I was at Game 7 against Vancouver.
He was the good luck charm.
I was a good luck charm, I guess.
You were there for Game 7 against Vancouver.
Oh, my God, the show's over. We kept this guy on that long.
You didn't do a good job.
You better mail that check to me.
I did not do a good job. I did a horrible job.
We let you co-host right
now. I worked. I was working.
You couldn't get Mason Lafayette's shot late in the game in that goal, huh?
I was working.
I got to say, you know, our show's winding up. We're going to have to hang up on this guy, Brian. I got to say, important with you tonight, Rich, you're a total disappointment when it comes to an NHL preview of any sort. You really disappointed me tonight. You got nothing upstairs? I mean, nothing. That's ridiculous.
Rich, drink the Kool-Aid.
You should be embarrassed with yourself. As much as you know about hockey, as many games as you watch, being the hockey guru of Manhattan that you are, you should be disgusted with yourself in the preview that you provided, which was very little tonight. Very little.
I only answered the questions on the
team. You didn't ask
I appreciate the call, but you got to, before you leave, you got to say, you got to at least, come on, you got to say the Islanders at least making the playoffs. They got to sneak in somehow.
He doesn't think they're making it.
Drink the Kool-Aid with me.
I'm not a politician. I'm not going to lie.
Okay. There you go.
I'll give you this much,
that's
Sweeney.
A truthful answer. But when they do make the playoffs, Rich, I'm going to come back and say that.
You said you're not a politician,
and you're not going to lie. When they do make the playoffs, and don't be surprised.
It'll be the first time that Sweeney's right about one of his teams this year.
I hope they make it, but I got 10 days to figure it out.
All right. You take those 10 days and pound your head and figure it out.
Circle October 14th. At the Garden.
All right, we got to hang up on this guy. Play
Rich,
a song on the way out.
Anytime.
All right, goodbye. Thanks for nothing. That's something else. You too.
He gave us a good.
Oh, come on.
Perspective of the league. It's early. It's still early.
And then he changed. He said the Rangers are going to win the Stanley Cup, and then he changed it because he's an Islander fan.
I would never.
That's
say
a great
that.
Job.
Boston versus the Kings.
L.A. and the Rangers in the Stanley
Cup.
And the Rangers are going to get their revenge.
They're not getting back. You think that
year two with Alain Vigneault. Stability sets in.
We'll see.
The King is looking for his first Stanley Cup, and he wants it before he retires.
You know what? I'm going to text
Brian,
you.
Do we have any music to wind this show down with? Is there anything in there? Play whatever's in there.
You're going to be getting texts when the Rangers get knocked out. Bye-bye.
Get knocked out of
what? You know about that
at
a
least
lot.
I know they're going to make the playoffs.
First of all, Stefan, how long is Stefan going to be out for?
I don't know. You want to talk about celebrating that fact by texting me when he got hurt?
I just texted Stefan bye-bye.
Yeah.
I feel bad about that.
I can hear the
sound
in your voice.
Bruce Harper, we thank you.
Great show. We'll see you in when we're coming back.
Yeah, you don't even know. So just remember, when one of your guys gets hurt, remember what you said about my guy, Stephon.
Look,
just
remember, you celebrated an injury to one of my players. No big deal. Hockey, no one cares.
The Jets are 1-3. They make me sick. The Islanders, they're going to make my partner sick pretty soon. But the New York Rangers are about to embark on another path to the Stanley Cup Finals. And with that, we'll see you in October. Hopefully the Jets will win a game before then. Until, take care, folks.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.